The views expressed on PFW in Progress are not those of the New England Patriots, its affiliates, or any of its partners. Content may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
The following takes place between 12 p.m. and 2 p.m.
This is PFW in Progress.
What are we talking about here? Orgy? Is it a human sacrifice of some kind?
PFW in Progress with Fred Kirsch.
I've studied the human mind. I've learned how to read it and ultimately control it.
Fascinating. I can't wait to read it.
It's $14.99 on my website.
Okay.
Plus shipping and handling.
Even if I buy it here?
It ships from somewhere else, isn't it? And I've been handling it.
Paul Perillo.
Very attractive man. Can fit a whole octopus in his mouth. Sort of an animal magnetism about him.
And Andy. And Andy?
Do you have any idea what it's like, Tim, to be up to your elbow in a zebra's vagina?
Andy Hart.
What does it make you think of?
I guess it kind of makes me, think of your penis.
Then you get it.
Eric Scalavino.
You know, that is so like you. You call a guy a douche and you get your first museum show out of it.
For now, anyway.
It smells like cabbage on this floor.
That's the smell of dead dreams.
I go to the clubs at night and people are like, hey, who's wearing the coleslaw? You know how hard it is to get laid when you smell like coleslaw?
PFW in Progress, part of the Patriots Football Network.
Oh man, they are planning one hell of a party.
All right, welcome to PFW in Progress. Doing a little bit of, what's his name, the WWF announcer?
It's not WWF, it's Michael Buffer.
Michael Buffer.
And his brother.
Andy Hart, Matt! welcome to the show, everybody. The gang's all here. Andy, actually, despite it being the summer of Andy, he looked outside.
And it's the winter of Andy.
This isn't summer weather and decided to come into work.
This is ridiculous. And I'm not the only one. Wes Welker was complaining about it on Twitter.
Yeah, it's
this is supposed to be one of like the three good months
Welker?
We get here.
I mean, we have people all over the world that listen, and so people don't actually know what's going on right here in Foxborough, Mass. But it's like 40 degrees.
Yeah. Cold, rainy,
50s, rainy.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Terrible.
51 today on my way into work.
51? It was 49 51. When I left work yesterday.
Raw dog.
Yeah. So not good weather, but that's okay because we have to work. So we don't care.
It's the exact same weather we had during like the whole playoffs. And
yeah.
6 months later.
Well, that's what's happened. We had this warm winter, and now it's cool now. It's like it's been the same temperature for months
right.
now.
Andy's here. Eric's here, back from France still. Paul's here. Kevin's in the booth, and Pepe is live tweeting during the show. So you want to follow at patriots.com to get his live tweets. What are we talking about today, guys?
Troy Brown.
Troy Brown is now officially in the Patriots Hall of Fame, as expected. As they say on Twitter.
No one's surprised.
Yeah, nobody wants to sound like they didn't know anything on Twitter,
as expected.
You know what I love about that, Freddie? The fact that you make fun of us all the time for being so petty, and these little things bother you so much.
Well, it does. It really does.
You're absolutely right.
I mean, you have 140 characters, and you're going to use some of them up to say, as expected.
That I already knew that.
Right.
You did.
But it is very true. It's very prominent on Twitter. You can't just report a fact. You have to make sure that everybody knows that you already knew the fact that you're reporting.
The ones I hate the most are confirm.
Yeah. Can confirm.
That just brings to everyone's attention that you didn't break a story.
Right.
Just get the information later, report it, and then whoever sees your thing might think, oh, look, that person
reported. And Andy, do we even have to get into the things that you and I really think about? Can confirm?
That they really can't?
They really didn't confirm anything?
Yeah, so.
He doesn't work here anymore.
No, there's plenty of people that I don't think confirm it.
Today.
Many people just do it. They just write it up there.
Here's something that people on Twitter don't know.
Wendy has large breasts.
No, but.
yeah. Massive.
Today, Eric Scalavino was honored here at Gillette Stadium for being here for 5 years.
Along with several other people.
Well, we don't have to say that.
Okay. They had an entire breakfast for Eric.
Every year, the Crafts have an employee breakfast where people who have reached certain milestone anniversaries are honored. And now, you've been here longer than 5 years, though, right?
Six. It's for the anniversaries from last calendar year.
Right. So, but Eric was honored among other people.
Mm-hmm.
So that was nice. Little buffet breakfast. And
our circulation manager, Carol Hardy, was also honored for 10 years.
Carol Hardy. Now, Jonathan introduced you. He called you interesting. What did he?
Yeah, he's an interesting character.
Interesting character.
I was wondering if whether you wrote that for him or not.
Then you get it.
I had, hey, yeah, who the F is this?
I had nothing to do with it.
Yeah. Yeah, they introduced, Jonathan introduced everyone who was honored today, and he said something like Fred Kirsch is really known for attracting interesting characters, and writers and media people like that are certainly fall into that category, and something along those lines. And
So, and then you stood up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
And then, then he says like, his kids enjoy listening to and watching and reading us.
Yeah.
They don't listen to this.
So. I think they do.
I hope he's not listening.
Rutrow.
Well, you know, I don't know why I say Rutrow. If they're listening and we're still here, then.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, though, if for example, Jonathan's oldest son, who I think he's eighth grade or freshman in high school, something like that. But if he listens to the show and laughs,
I think he's a little bit older than that now.
You know, I can understand why we're still on the air. You know, if we're entertaining his kid, then
What about if he has no complaints,
talk about him,
right?
Like he was when he was throwing on the field during the draft.
He probably loves it.
We're
talking
this guy
about
with terrible accuracy. Oh, hey, Harry,
why don't you call into the show? Right in. Give us a little.
He and Andy have the same maturity level, so.
Who, Harry?
No, yeah. I think he's more mature than Andy.
Are you kidding? Harry's more mature than all of us.
Certainly in terms of his bank account.
Webradio at patriots.com.
Isn't it Robert Kraft's birthday today, too?
Yeah, it is. Yes. It's Robert Kraft, so happy birthday. And we all sang happy birthday to Robert.
We did.
I didn't think it was very enthusiastic, though.
I think he was saying, no, don't sing. And Jonathan was saying, yes, sing. So I think you had a little bit of
the third base coach.
No, go.
Which guy ultimately has the final say here?
Right.
Spirituality.
So, but that
was it. Really, a no, like a stop, or was it a no? Why the hell did you stop? Keep going.
I don't think he was comfortable.
It was a nice way to start the morning. I think we should do that every week.
Did you go, Pepe?
Every day.
Free breakfast.
Did not go.
No.
Did you know about it?
Not invited.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Oh. Why were you not invited? Are you full time?
Not yet.
Oh,
okay. My bad.
That's why I wasn't invited.
My bad.
These people that
Kevin,
work
did you
here
go?
For years before they're full time. Everybody just assumes they're full time when they're not.
I just thought it was mandatory.
Well, I thought when he started working down there,
I did
that he was full time.
Are you full time?
As Bob Sales used to say. Never mind.
Full time work, part time pay.
Stream of consciousness again.
Okay.
No, that would be Kevin.
So I figured that was kind of Patriots news. It's stuff that's going on
inside
here at Gillette Stadium.
Sure.
But yes.
Who else was honored? Who was some of the other?
Andre Tippett for 25.
25.
Yep.
George, you know George the
George Biagin.
Yep. 25 years.
25 years.
10.
Don Brosher, the equipment manager, honored for 35, but should have been honored for 40.
Right.
It's an HR mix-up, but
it was a shock.
There were also
Fred
a couple
never
of
misses an opportunity to take a shot there.
There were a couple of people listed on the program who weren't introduced.
Well, they probably weren't there.
Well, there was
Carl Yastrzemski wasn't introduced.
Yeah, he was one.
Yeah.
You know who we're talking about, though.
Yes,
right?
I don't.
And my friend Josh Boyer, our buddy Josh. The
did Nick show up?
Nick showed up.
Nick
got his football.
There.
Yeah.
Boyer did.
Brosher
not.
Got up.
Boyer was coaching, right?
But there was somebody.
I don't think any of the football guys showed up the last couple of years, right?
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was sitting with
the first one. There were football people because that's
two years
ago. I didn't go last year.
All the scouts have come. I've seen scouts and that, but
maybe
assistant
that's why Nick
coaches.
Was there.
I don't remember coming.
2 years ago, Dante was there.
Really?
Yeah,
he went up.
I remember he was there, and there were some other coaches that were there. I don't remember them all going. I think Ivan Fears was there. I don't remember him going up though. But Bill didn't go.
No, I know Bill didn't. I wouldn't expect him to.
So.
He's anti.
What else we got going on Patriots wise?
we talked about big Troy smile Brown. On his face though in the picture in the Herald today.
Well, because he likes
Celtics,
to be promoted. He's not anti Bill Belichick.
Celtics
he's
cheerleaders.
Everything else.
There are a lot of pictures of him.
Yeah, they made a big stir. All the Patriots at the Celtics game. Belichick was front and center, but Wes Welker was there. Vince Wilfork.
Rob Gronkowski was
Kevin
front and
Falk,
center.
Newly bald.
They had him up on the jumbotron. Waving.
Now, were you working Sunday night?
I was. And they had him up waving a flag around. And then
flexing, right?
He spiked the flag, and apparently the garden went nuts, like just louder than at any point during the game.
Was that about as loud as you can? I mean, I'm not even just talking for that specific, but the whole game. Was that as loud as you can remember it all year?
Oh, yeah. by far the loudest it's been all year.
Yeah.
He wants to be arrested.
That was an electric.
He wants to do like a shoot interview and get beat. That's what he wants to be.
That sounded pretty electric.
He might get
TV.
To do it sooner or later.
And the thing about it is everyone was in unison. Like when they were going defense or let's go Celtics, I mean, it was like one huge roar. You know, where sometimes like people are off a little bit and it's scattered, but they were on point.
How come those 18,000 don't come here for games?
Well, 18,000 do. That's the problem is we have 70.
So that's the limit. We got about 20,000 fans who can work together and be loud. And
we need to work on that. You know, it's the education of the fan. You know, we heard
as
about
opposed
education
to the coach.
Of the
cheap
coach.
Tradition in the garden.
We need the education of the fan. They need to know when and how to do things.
Yeah, but you don't need to know. Like when they start their BS chants, there's no like knowledge there.
Spontaneous.
You can know if you feel like your team just got screwed. And I'd love to hear this place. And I'd love to hear 60,000 people chanting "boo."
And you definitely don't. That's not prompted.
No,
because
certainly it's the opposite.
They get in trouble. They
will try to squash it. One drunk guy up in the back, up in the cheap seats.
When the Celtics fans start the defense chant, you gotta.
But that's prompted.
That is
that usually comes on the screen.
What I'm saying is, when you do it really well like that and loud, it's got to give you a boost if you're a player. The same way if you're on defense here at Gillette Stadium and everybody's on their feet roaring, not when they walk up to the line of scrimmage, but from the time the offense is in the huddle, that's going to give a boost to the defense.
But you're saying they need to be taught or – I'm just saying the crowds at the Bruins and the Celtics chant BS with some regularity.
Well, that's
and that's unprompted. That's 18,000 people, as he said, starting with one drunk guy.
And reacting
whatever,
to the game.
Right.
You know, you don't need any
education.
You're
going to tell me these people can't do that? They can't see a bad pass interference or they can't see a whatever and just react?
Well, yeah, but that's – and that's fine. They need to do that. But I'm talking more about making noise when the opposing team's on offense. That's where the fans can really help.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying beggars can't be choosers. I'm just looking for them to build.
It's a longer time that they'd have to make noise, too, though. When you think about it, after the play's over, if you want them to make noise through the offensive huddle and through the play.
But that's what you do.
Agreed, but I'm saying most fans would look at it as, we'll make noise for 10 seconds, 15 seconds.
Well, that's not
helpful. That's all you have to do is make noise during the play. You don't have to make when they're in the huddle or anything.
No, you do it.
He wants it for 55 seconds.
Who cares? It only matters to you. Only distracted them when they come out of the huddle.
No, you got to screw up with the coach, the quarterback. And, you know, you want him going, I can't hear you. That's what you're looking for. That's why Kansas City's so
I think
good.
That's why they win all those games. I think the defense.
The fans. I'm talking about their fans.
I got exactly the reaction I was looking for from everybody. I'm an Andy Hart, pat myself on the back.
The Kansas City fans cause more, you know, movement.
Yeah, more false
penalties.
Start penalties and more losses in big games than any fans around
but
the league.
That's for the team to worry about.
I just think that. It's more important to get the defense chance.
Sticking up for the fans.
No. I think I'm not sticking. I agree with you guys. I don't think they make any noise at all. I'm not sticking up for them. But I think that, you know, a good defense chant in a football game can impact what the offense is trying to do with the line. And that's where most of the stuff goes on nowadays.
Yeah, but I think.
To Matt's point, like, I don't think you need it for the whole 45 seconds in between, 40 seconds in between plays. You just need it when they break the huddle to distract them when they're trying to get set up.
I think you do it when they're on offense, you distract everything.
And I think that's one thing that makes it easier to
helmet,
do at the
communication,
garden for
everything.
Hockey and basketball is it's constant. Like, they don't do it during timeouts when they're trying to talk to their players on the sideline, which is the equivalent of a huddle. You know, they don't do it, you know, do all this stuff, let's go Celtics, while it's a timeout. And Eric Spoelstra's trying to talk to the Miami Heat and get their communication down. They do it during the game.
I'm just not being
It's more
picky.
Of a constant
I'm
game.
I'm allowing them to start small.
That's how I feel. You know,
just build up a little bit.
A little defense chance. Where's the big D with the fence?
Right.
You know, from like 1978. Yeah. I'll take that.
The guy with the multicolored afro thing in the front row.
Where's the John 316 guy? I'll take anything at this point.
They've got all that at Patriots game.
Mario Chalmers? He shouldn't even have arms.
It's the noise. It's the unified noise that makes a difference.
Well, part of that is the size.
It should also be spontaneous. Like, you shouldn't have to be spurred to look up at a video board and say, oh, now it's time to sing defense.
You're right.
But I think the size allows for that. When it is smaller, if a guy starts it in one area, it can spread through the whole place quicker.
Well, that's Fred's
20,000
theory. Well, when you have 70,000, well,
No, if, but not even just 70,000.
If you get like a good 5,000 people trying to do something in a 70,000 seat stadium, it's probably not going
to
last.
No, but I'm
like
saying like you have to jump a tunnel. So it has to go from, even if it's strong on one side of the tunnel, it has to cross the tunnel into that section. Right. It has to cross the daylight or light openings or whatever the hell they're called. But it has to get from the lower deck to the upper deck, which is further apart than it is.
I agree with you.
It's all squished in so that I think it's more likely to burn.
I'll take anything. I mean, if they want to break out a wave, I'd be excited.
Sure.
I mean, anything that they want to do to show, you know, a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of noise. And they can do it in their defense. There have been times, we always are critical of them, and I am as critical of the fans as anybody, but there have been times where they've been pretty loud. I thought in the AFC Championship game last year, for example, it was pretty loud.
Right. So they can't.
You know, that Spike's interception when he made that great play down the seam, I mean, that was it was pretty loud. I mean, right. Unfortunately, we turned the ball over.
It's
the next
possible
play.
To do it, but these fans need to be in, even when there's not some great play going on. That's their contribution, besides all the money they pay. Web radio at patriots.com is the email
radio.
Address. 508-298-0398 is the Ace Ticket hotline.
Can we talk about a player that's been in the news a little bit this week? Patrick Chung.
Yes.
There was a report from the Boston Herald that the market for him, he's entering the final year of his rookie deal, will be in the 6 to 7 million range, or was it 7 to 8?
I thought it was lower than that.
Oh no, it was high. It was definitely 7. I don't know if it was 6 to 7 or
okay.
7 to 8. 7 was one of them.
Six to seven.
6 to 7. I find that remarkably ridiculous. $7 million for him? For what?
Yeah, not at this point.
He missed half the season. But as I said to Paul, guess how many forced fumbles and fumble recoveries he has in his 3-year NFL career?
None.
0.0. And we all think of him, you know, the perception is he's this, if he could stay healthy, he's active, he's around the ball. And I buy into that. I think he brings an energy to the field. But, you know, these Bob Sanders, you know, when he's healthy, he's a, what?
No.
I mean,
not yet.
Because somebody asked me, like, if he can stay healthy, what do you project for him this year? Well, I think he's a 100-tackle guy. He's clearly around the ball a lot. He had, like, 70 tackles in 8 games.
If he could play 16 games, I think that's very legit.
But I wanted to come up with impact plays, what could be a legitimate number, and I'm talking about sacks, interceptions, forced fumbles, fumbles recoveries.
I went with a handful.
and I went to look back to see kind of what he's had. He had 3 interceptions 2 years ago. He's had kind of like a sack a year, but no forced fumbles, no fumble recoveries. That's not a lot of, you know, crooked numbers, to steal a term from baseball, or if Lawyer Malloy, what did they call him when he stopped having them, when they were running him out of town?
Unemployed.
No, but they had a term, whatever they were putting out, that he didn't have any of those crooked numbers, those impact plays. He was just tackles at that point. Well, Chung hasn't had a lot of those impact plays. I think he has one postseason.
There was a lot of criticism of Lawyer in the
0-2
season.
If you're making $7 million a year, you better be an impact player. And impact players make impact plays. I mean, there's far more Brandon Spikes impact plays to point to, and he's off injured and, you know, not always on the field, but when he's on the field, he's making impact plays. Are we really going to pay him $7 million a year? I mean,
no.
I know he's your only safety from last year. And
I don't think we are.
I don't think we are, nor should we.
No.
Peace out. And that's what I actually tweeted. I retweeted Jeff Howe's tweet and said, if that's true, bye-bye, Patrick, because that's ridiculous.
Yeah, and I like Patrick Chung. And
well,
I like him as a player. I think he's a good player.
He's solid.
He's not a $7 million a year player.
No,
he's not.
Ish kebab. Now that may be just
that might not be
speculation
accurate.
From you know the player side saying yeah the value at him is $7 million a year.
And who knows? Because I think he used some sources that sort of got him in the neighborhood of the parameters that he was talking about. Now maybe you're right. Maybe
yeah,
his
it sources source were Patrick Chung.
You know, well, maybe it was his agent.
Yeah. No, I
you know all
I
this
firmly
is,
believe
this
that was a player
the, you know,
side.
You know, because I thought he listed guys like Polamalu and others. I have to go back and read that because I think I read it wrong. I thought he listed some of the high-end safeties and what they were making, and it was in that area. And then he said he would be below that, you know, clearly below that. But if he's not a $7 million player.
No,
he's
not
a $6 million. And I'm not trying to make a controversy here either. I mean, it's
right.
Not like Patrick Chung is demanding $7 million.
I mean, how much does Polamalu make? Or, you know, name some of the other big safeties in the
Eric
league.
Eric Weddle, $42
million. Well, you know what? Eric Weddle screws everything up. He really does. That contract.
But I would even say Eric Weddle has made more of those plays than Patrick Chung has. And I don't think Eric Weddle's very good.
And he had 7 picks last year. I mean, he's a Pro Bowl safety. I haven't heard Patrick Chung be called a Pro Bowl safety.
No,
or even
and I don't think I'm not trying to be fraudulent here. I don't think Eric Weddle is anything special. I think they vastly overpaid
him.
He's
up there on Rajon Rondo land as one of the more overpaid athletes in sports.
Had to get a shot in.
The first Rondo shot.
But I really got to appreciate Andy, though, because he has his beliefs and he sticks with them even in the midst of one of the more special postseason individual performances that you've ever seen in any sport.
Hit a layup and talk to me.
He says he misses all the layups. Well, he was like 16 for 22 for 44 points. He didn't miss that many shots that night. But not my Andy. He sticks with it.
Well, that's the problem with Twitter. It's, sometimes you do a knee-jerk tweet.
No, I actually did it intentionally because he had started the game out. I knew it was going to be a game where people would be raving about him and be blowing him and saying he's better than he is.
Easy.
What?
Blowing.
Highly praising him.
So that was intentional?
Yes.
Oh, I don't think so.
I think it definitely
I think
was covering
Kraft
up.
On line
and
four.
I was,
or Harry.
And I was hoping to watch that entire game, and to do that, I need something to keep me entertained, and the response tweets that I got kept me entertained and kept me from falling asleep on the couch. So I might do another one tonight, because I want to watch this game.
You want a live tweet during the game?
Him having one of the greatest performances in the history of the NBA wasn't enough to keep you entertained?
I keep...
As soon as I hit the button on the couch and recline it, I'm not long
yeah,
for the
I
world.
Keep...
You have a reclining couch?
Yeah.
You have one of those sofas with a secret?
No.
No. I have a reclining couch. It has recliners built in.
That's a sofa with a secret.
No, a sofa with a secret is like...
Like a refrigerator or something.
Yeah, you take the like cup holders and
right.
stuff like
yeah,
that.
I
and
don't have that.
We're going to get into an argument with a sofa with a secret.
Yes, why not?
Well, it's not an argument, but that's what it is.
I have
it's
a reclining couch.
You say it's not an argument.
Recliners aren't... You never saw a sofa with a recliner?
I do.
Everybody
I
has
thought
them,
that huh. when a sofa was a recliner, it was a sofa with a secret.
Mm-mm. I think it has to more than that. It has to have the amenities that Paul
yeah.
was describing.
It's just okay. a recliner, built-in
okay.
recliner.
Oh, so now we've seen, Andy, you and I are irrelevant, but when Eric agrees, oh, okay, all right, says Fred.
Yeah. Pompous one.
Right. So.
Wow.
Anyway.
That hurts a little bit. But it is the day that we're honoring Eric, and
that's
the
true.
Entire organization met this morning to honor Eric. So.
What else do we got? Any other Patriots news? I mean, are we really quiet this week?
Well, there's some... I mean, not really Patriots news, but NFL news with the referees.
Well,
have
yeah.
you been following that?
And I think, Paul, this is your chance. Because they are actively right
my
now.
Chance.
We're what? Looking right now for referees to
replacement
fill in.
Refs.
Oh, I don't yeah. want to do that.
You could show them how it's done.
No, he couldn't.
How could I do
you
that?
You have to be able to run down the field.
No, well, first of all.
You couldn't.
I couldn't. But let's not kid ourselves and think that they can either.
No, but you
there's
couldn't.
Plenty of those guys that
you wouldn't
can't
make
move.
It. You wouldn't make it.
No.
You'd
no
tap
chance.
Out.
No chance.
Go to the sideline and they'd be like, no, we don't have another
out.
Official. We don't
one
have
thing,
one.
The one thing I did make a comment on
the game.
To Fred yesterday, I think, was this is going to be now, you know what's going to happen if it ends up coming push to shove and there's replacement refs. They'll be all over them. You right. know, every bad call, everybody, well, this is what happens.
It'll be this year's lockout.
And I'm going to tell you, in my opinion, it will be very similar to the performance that we normally get from week to week. Now, when a pass interference costs a team a game, it's going to be a referendum on replacement refs, as opposed to just a bad call that we see every week in, you know, virtually every stadium.
Right. And they're not actually recruiting official, like...
Well, they're trying to get
college,
yeah.
right,
yeah.
or something?
Retired they said
college.
They wouldn't. They said they, yeah, retired college.
Oh,
they wouldn't dip into the,
are...
the BCS crew, okay. and they would consider Arena League and retired
oh.
college refs.
Maybe Paul Kincannon, our former IT guy who
oh,
does
yeah.
officiating.
Although, if you want to consider it.
Yeah, maybe he'll consider
although
it.
He already does the chain gang, so he might kind of be involved too much to where he wouldn't cross the...
Oh, does that mean he's part of that union?
I don't know are if they? He's part of the union, but he might not want to cross them.
Now I've heard
I'd assume
that...
he's part of the union. Do they have their own chain gang union?
I don't know.
I assume they're a part
on
of
the chain gang.
Now, I've heard that this is because the refs are demanding more money, but do we know, like, what
no
the
idea.
Divide is?
Didn't know it was happening until
what
I heard it last
week.
What
kind of increase they're looking for, and, you know...
I also think there's the issue about full and part-time.
Well, yeah, but I haven't heard that being one of the stickling points.
I'm not sure a lot of them want to be full-time. They have really
yeah.
good careers.
And Goodell, I think,
I think
wants
they would,
full-time.
I think they would lose a lot of refs.
Unless,
if they
yeah, unless they really jacked up the pay.
But they also might lawyers. Gain a whole
yeah.
bunch,
all,
too, because now people say, oh, okay,
it's
I, can,
a job
I
and,
can make a career
right.
out of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, you can make a career out of it now. They are paid pretty well, I think.
But then why do most of them still have the other job?
Well, because they're career people. They're driven people. I mean, I think there's a certain type of person that is in that area.
All right, so you're the commissioner.
I bet you they make a lot more money than us, and we work full-time, and they work part-time.
I just don't get it anyway.
You're the commissioner of the NFL,
full-time.
Okay? You're considering making an NFL referee job full-time. What do you have them do during the offseason? I know honing their skills and train, but really, what are you having them do full-time year-round?
I think that's my minor league that I set up.
What do you have them do Tuesday through Saturday for most of the season until there's Thursday night football?
Part of that is travel. Part of that is, you know, going over what they did the week before, reviewing the games, you know, that type of stuff.
Reviewing their own actions, their own calls.
They do that.
They also work during the season at their other job. It's not like they take their other job off for the whole season.
So Plus, is every single referee employed elsewhere?
I don't know.
I think most of them are. Number one. Number two, they have all of these evaluation processes. They do film study. They have guys that evaluate their work, and they grade it every week.
Right.
I mean,
you could do more if you wanted to. You could watch every single game and every single official. I don't know how beneficial or what it would lead to.
What creatively can you have them do in the off season?
I don't think there's that much to do.
In the off season, I just don't. I mean, I like Andy says,
maybe get in better
shape.
You
could always come up with something for them to do, but I just don't know how that something is going to translate to performance.
Yeah, I don't think it would change much.
Yeah, so that's a tough question then. I mean, if they're demanding to be full-time employees.
Oh, I don't think they are.
I think it's the other way around.
I think
Goodell is demanding that they become
Goodell really? Wants. Yeah.
Oh, I thought the NFL was against that.
I'm not positive
the owners
on that,
were
but that's how
that.
I looked at it.
I think Goodell, even at the Super Bowl during his State of the Union, State of the League speech, said that was one of the points that he brought up, consideration of full-time officiating in response, I think, to a question. That somebody else, but it might have been on his,
of
his own
volition.
But which
side are the owners falling on is my question. Are they?
I don't know exactly what the majority of owners think, but I certainly recall Goodell saying that he personally was in favor of it.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I don't. I recall always them considering it, and that the referee union was always in favor of it, but the league was always pushing back against that.
Maybe in years past, but yeah. I think now at least Goodell I think has changed.
Now,
after you tweet that, could you do a quick Google?
Yeah, maybe strippers can fill us in. Now, Major League Baseball,
right,
Paul, are the umpires a full time Major League Baseball umpires? Right.
I guess I don't know.
Well, it's kind of hard to be part time at 162,
right, and you only have 2 months off, basically.
Right. I mean, if you go into the postseason, you're talking about a long time. It's hard to call that a part time job.
Right.
Yeah,
you don't have the week off to go do another job and then fly in on Saturday.
Right. I don't know the answer to that, but my assumption would be that they are full time.
Yep. But it's tough for it's 16 games plus playoffs. It's tough for the NFL to warrant a full time position for referees unless you're the head of referees or something like
that. Well, but what does full and part time mean? Just going to give them benefits? Are you going to double their salary?
It's benefits,
what is the exact actual issue? Because guys could still work. If you give them benefits, as long as they commit to whatever you ask them to commit to, if that's camp in spring, meeting here, meeting there, guys could still do other things if they wanted.
So what's the issue now then? Why?
I don't think it's an issue. I think it's the dumbest issue ever.
Yeah.
Referees inherently are going to make mistakes. Whether you call them full-time or part-time, they're still going to make mistakes.
And I would say, as much as I give them a lot of grief, do you have information for us, Ed?
What do you want me to look up? I
look up Goodell's position
background
on the full-time referee.
Yeah, on this full-time refereeing.
Who wants them to be full-time and who doesn't?
Roger Goodell, Jewish. Roger Goodell, net worth. Roger Goodell, wife. I love when they offer you the...
I forgot you could see that screen. I'm like, how is he guessing all those things off the top
of
his
head? I'm pretty
smart. Yes. Yeah.
I actually have a Google logarithm in my brain.
As much grief as I give the referees,
a
I do think that
or
they
algorithm.
They,
I know what you meant.
I mean, they put an effort. I think that these guys want to be as effective as they can be. I think that there's a good commitment to what they're doing, and I don't necessarily see it as being a problem of they don't commit enough time.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right. I don't think it's an issue.
I think that they are as good as they possibly can be, and the effort is there, and the preparation is there. I just don't know. I don't really see this as an issue, full-time, part-time.
They're potentially going to make 10 full-time officials spread out among the various crews.
And who wants that, though?
I don't know. It doesn't really say.
Well, Goodell is
that's
quoted
a quote right here.
Goodell is quoted, but he's saying, you know, fans want it, teams want it.
Again, with the fans, what fans want this?
Well, he said consistency is exactly what every club wants.
Oh, yeah. Sure, okay.
But he doesn't actually say if he thinks that full-time officials lead to consistency.
Right. Right.
Yeah. No. See, he is. This is a major criticism. He consistently tells everybody what the fans think, but I think misinterprets the message. You know, fans don't like the preseason games, so the fans want 18 games. Well, no.
Right.
The fans don't like the preseason games. They didn't say anything about wanting 18.
Right.
You know, the fans want consistency in the officiating. It didn't necessarily mean that they want, you know,
right.
wasting resources on making them full-time officials or whatever the
right.
the issue may be. I think that he often speaks for the fans incorrectly. Let's put it that way.
Craig in Ottawa, back to the fan thing. I am the nut in the cheap seats yelling at other fans to get up and cheer. Plain and simple, our fans seem entitled to be there. Mm-hmm. I am chanting from the second the ball switches over to the other team. I hear fans all the time say it's not a loud stadium because of the shape, which is stupid because that Denver playoff game was so loud you couldn't hear yourself. Our fans only get up for playoff games, which is pathetic. Last year was terrible because every time I got the crowd in my section going, our defense made a terrible play, and nothing shuts up the crowd quicker than a huge completion down the field. I will continue to have my section rocking all the time, though, so don't worry, Fred. That's Craig from Ottawa. He comes all the way from Ottawa.
That is a little bit true. There is some blame on the defense here because when it's 3rd and 23
now.
And you give up 24, nothing sucks the life out of a crowd like that. I'm not going to get up again if you can't even stop that.
And that happened consistently for the last, two, three years now? Now, that doesn't excuse...
But they don't allow a lot of points, so get off their back.
It doesn't excuse the last decade or so where... We've sort of complained about this in Gillette Stadium's history.
I complained about it at the old Foxborough Stadium.
Well, they sucked a little there, too. But Paul's point is when they were at their greatest.
When you
think the 03-04 team with Richard Seymour and Rodney
Harrison.
When
they were allowing like 11% conversions on third downs and they were still quiet.
The players that were great
and
had a great defense
about.
Were complaining about it.
Joel, who claims he's a true fan in Merrimack, New Hampshire, says, once again, I find you riding the fans for their lack of emotion. Next time you're at a game, unwrap your lips from the burger or dog you're shoveling down your maw and take a walk up to the nosebleed
your
seats.
Your maw.
You'll find the emotion and the noise. Once you start getting below that level, you run into all the Nautica-wearing yuppies sitting cross-legged in their pleated corduroys and loafers, sipping serenely on a cup of Merlot and occasionally bursting forth gently with a muted golf clap. Therein lies your problem. The real football fans can't afford those seats. And what's worse is when we are up on our feet cheering on our team, you have to face the glare of the aforementioned yuppies, whom I would gladly walk down and punch out, except I'd get kicked out of the stadium. There are plenty of real fans, Paul. We are just sadly we are just sadly outnumbered by the scarf-wearing zombies that masquerade as football fans. And the sad part is, with prices going up, this will only get worse. As usual, it is always enjoyable listening to your banter. Keep it up.
Well, this is a big part of the issue, economics. And I don't know if you read, there was a story in the Globe this weekend, might have been the Globe magazine, where a woman like wrote this whole flowery Eric-like piece about remembering her first game at Fenway, and she went with her dad, and it was ladies'
night. $6.
Tickets were $2, and the true baseball fans were there. Well, that's fine, and that's true. But if you want your team to have $180 million payroll and compete with the Yankees, they have to do all these things that increase revenue. Part of that is tickets. Part of that is catering to these yuppie Nautica-wearing fans. So I'm sure they could go back to a $35 million payroll, but then you'll be the one bitching that they suck.
And even
that's a good point. But I also wanted to go to your point, Fred. Why are there other stadiums that are able to make noise?
Right.
Are they not? You know, soaking their fans for exorbitant prices.
Right.
No, I mean that's what this guy
sounds
no,
so. It's
no, point, but that's
Paul.
What this guy is
no,
complaining about.
No yuppies
about.
In Kansas City.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. By the way,
there probably aren't a lot of yuppies in Kansas City.
No. By the way, I didn't.
That's a side issue.
Denver, though. Denver's
by the way,
loud,
I didn't know that Nautica was like a rich man's.
Yeah.
You know,
actually,
brand.
That's middle of.
And pleated corduroys.
I knew you'd know.
Pleated corduroys. I mean, what are we in 1978?
And he still wears pleated corduroys.
That is true. That is true. And what happens? when he wears them.
Even
what
though,
does every woman in the office do to him?
No, not every woman. Just Maura Wilson.
I'm every woman.
See, even though in the NFL there is that, you know, salary cap and shared revenues, every team is expected from every other owner to maximize their revenues. So in Kansas City, the overall price to go see a game might be lower than Boston, but it's based on what that market is. So, like, the
and
cost,
it's not that
the cost
much
of living
difference.
There is less, so people make less money.
Right.
Rents are less. Mortgages are less. You know, but they try to maximize what people can pay. So even though Boston might be higher to go see a Red Sox or Patriots game, it's still the same percentage out of a person's pocketbook.
And they're in business.
And but I'm not even arguing about how much money it is. I'm not. I'm with Andy. I mean, it's you have to find a way to pay your bills. I mean, I'm not arguing. Listen, I think we can all agree that probably ticket prices across the board, every sport, are too high.
But they're not.
But even
because too high would imply they can't sell them.
Right. If they're marked out, they're
too high. No, I understand what you're saying. But
it's unfortunate that we may not be in position to buy season tickets or go to a game.
But it's a very common thing that people would say in sports today that the common man, the blue-collar worker, has been priced out. Well, why is that only in Boston?
It's not.
It's not.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's true, it should be true everywhere. But yet, Seattle routinely is, you know, the loudest place.
And there's
Denver,
more yuppies
routinely.
In Seattle than anywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
See, I mean, Kansas City, routine. I mean, these places are outdoor places. I'm excluding the indoor places where it's easier to make noise. These places make a lot of noise. Do they not have corporate sponsors that get the big tickets? I don't know. I'm asking.
No, of course they do.
I think that one of the things that's an issue is definitely our club seat areas. And I think that there are obviously a lot of the, as that email called, the yuppies wearing Nautica are in those seats. And I don't think they're as apt to make a lot of noise. And those are the prime sections. That's the middle. That's the lifeblood of your stadium from 20 to 20, you know, right in the middle. And I do think that they're probably a little bit quieter. And maybe some of the other stadiums, they have luxury suites, but then they don't really have the same amount of club seats that some other places do, and maybe that's the issue. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is.
Let me tell you something. In any of these stadiums now, the lower bowl between the 30s, okay, whether they're club or not, those are the PSL seats. We don't have PSLs here, but those PSLs are expensive. Between the 30s, lower bowl, those are the rich people.
So the rich people in other cities make noise, and our rich people don't?
That's right. Look, in the 80s, in the heyday of the Celtics in the 80s with Larry Bird, there was no whiter collar fan base than the Celtics in the Garden. That place was loud.
It was a wine and cheese crowd toward the end.
When I went, it was loud. Larry Bird and
what everybody says.
It was
loud. Including Gillette. When I went, it was loud. My section was really loud.
My section was loud.
Adam,
I'm a real fan.
Adam in Alexandria, Virginia. Another big issue with crowd noise, along with economics and spoiled fan, is the stadium size. By far the smallest of the modern stadiums at Patriots, 68,000. And the open design lets a lot of noise out as well. And proportionally, we probably have a lot of club seat rich fans who sit inside when it's cold. It does not help either. Why can't they add a few thousand seats and maybe close off a little of the end of the process? Again,
the norm is just closer to 68,000 these days.
Philly is the same.
Right.
Baltimore is the same. They're all the same. Tennessee, it's all
state stadium.
You just
heard an email right in say that during the Denver game he couldn't hear himself think. Same stadium. So it can be done.
Yeah. I
And again, I'll go back to Foxborough Stadium. That was as small as you could, you know, basically a concrete bowl, and they were only loud once in a while.
Yeah, I think I agree with Andy and Eric here. There's not much. I mean, there's like places like FedEx Field that have 90,000, but for the most part, 70,000 is about the norm.
That's the norm. Yeah.
And that's what you have. We have 68 or something like that.
Right.
I mean, it's not a small stadium in terms
college
of capacity.
Largest
college
stadiums
is 82.5.
What?
According to
who
this
is?
List that I'm finding.
MetLife
Stadium has 82.5.
That's a
FedEx
big one.
Is higher.
Yep.
FedEx is 90.
Unless
FedEx
they cut
has
out
79,000.
I know FedEx has been removing seats.
Yeah, they might.
But
yeah, they had 90 at one
they
point.
They removed over 10,000.
And Cowboys Stadium,
well, that's
could
a, that's
could
ridiculous.
Increase. Yeah, yeah. That number could fluctuate. But
they're all
for
right
the most
around
part,
70
all,
plus or minus a couple thousand.
Yep.
So. What's the smallest?
The smallest would be Soldier Field 61,000. Then Lucas Oil at 63, and they just pipe in their sound.
Oh,
that was the dome. That was the dome where they piped it in.
Then O.co at 63.
O.co.
A. O.no.
So my point, it can be done. I'm not saying
people can be loud anywhere in the streets. They can riot and be loud.
Look, I know the Kansas City configuration does help. It's closed in. It's very steep.
Not as much as the fans help.
But I have heard Gillette Stadium be loud. It's just not consistently loud.
Yeah, those night playoff games, I think, tend to be a little bit raucous.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons.
We're the first game here.
People just need to get more lubricated.
It's Pittsburgh.
Place was rocking.
Were you on the sideline for that game?
No. Working with you, Paul. That hurts a little bit.
In 2002, you were working with us?
Right here. Cuts deep.
What are you going to do when these things happen? Really?
I thought it was after that.
That was my first season.
Wow. Shane left. We won a Super Bowl when Shane just hit the road, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't make fun of him enough for that.
Note to self, call Shane.
Let's go to the Ace.
Note to self. Rip Shane via email.
Let's go to the Ace Ticket Hotline. Big Al's in Georgia. Hey, Al.
Fellas, how you doing?
Good.
How's the hotties?
We're not going there again, Andy. Sorry.
Okay. Oh, I wasn't here for that. What happened?
Little restraining order action.
Now.
Big Al. Wait, hold on, Big Al. Hey, Big Al, hold on a second. I need to get refreshed on
quick
what happened.
Quick recap.
With
Big Al is a professor.
Yeah.
Who has a thing for hot young students.
Oh, good for you.
The
good
division,
for you.
Specifically the
Don't
division
two
division
two
softball NCAA champions. Champion Valdosta State.
Really?
And evidently, there's a restraining order on line
Fred
one.
Before though, we really shouldn't go there again. Fred was nervous about that, and I don't want to
for you,
for you, young man. Yeah. But please. I'm not a Nautica wearing yuppie, but I did fall for that whole Ocean Pacific thing back in the day. I don't know how I did, but
Zeke Cavaricci
managed. I tossed all
I
that.
I had a
stuff
few of those
out,
that
though.
Fell off the back of a truck.
So what do you wear now? What do the professors wear now when they're creeping it up with the ladies?
Please, I just
answer the question.
Crew,
you just wear what feels good. It's, khakis. Khakis are good.
Timeless
sport shirt. It gets warm down here. You can't really dress up. It's more like it's summer school all year round.
So you encourage them to shed clothing.
It's actually like 50 degrees, but you're just watching softball, so it gets warm.
You get hot and bothered.
Please, again, Fred gets creeped out by this kind of talk.
All right, Al, go ahead. I'm sorry.
We can't go there because Fred's,
Oh, yeah,
I know.
Blame it on Fred.
Don't blame it on me, Al.
You have tenure. I understand. We can't go there.
That's one thing about, I guess I am kind of creepy. I mean, every once in a while I have these weird dreams about Gino Cappelletti. I don't know what it is.
Fred, I think that was a shot at you.
Yeah, might have been.
So what?
I'm so creepy. I even tell other people about him.
Hello.
What do you got with the Patriots today? What
well,
thanks,
look,
babe.
Hang around for a little while. About how regular folks have been priced out of the stadiums, and I think that's true to a certain. Basically, the sports bar with the big flat screen has now become the stadium. For most
Buffalo Wild Wings
working. Yes, Buffalo Wild Wings has become the stadium for most people. And actually the way that with all the high def and replays and breakdowns and analysis and halftime highlights, I mean really it's almost as if professional football is a better or as good at least, maybe even better overall sports experience than going to the stadium.
Yep.
You're not the only one that said that to me in the last, four or five years.
The commissioner knows it. I mean, they've acknowledged they're competing with the HDTV generation.
There's no doubt with the replayability and all that, and now being able to peek into all the other games. It's tough to compete.
What are you going to park? The parking's always a hassle if you're not a season ticket holder. A lot of times, down here, the Jaguars, if you've got a season ticket, you've got to – they take care of you on the parking, but if you just want to go to a game to see, I guess the Patriots are going to be down here this year, I think, right? Are they on the schedule to come to Jacksonville this year?
Yes, in December. Is that
they are?
Yeah.
Oh, so we do need to get Vito Stellino on the show.
Yeah, but not until
later in the year.
Maybe get him on a season preview show.
We just need Vito.
Get Vito on as much as possible.
Right.
So you want me to jump right in with that one, Andy, when I introduce him. First question, how's the communication system down there?
But, as far as the fans making noise, I think that's been a trend with, for some reason, with Patriots fans traditionally. When the team has had their bad stretches, and then all of a sudden they get good. You know, after a while, you get a little spoiled, I think, in that. That's the way we were, I think, in the late 70s when the team really broke out in 76 and went from 3-11 to 11-3 and had a, you know, everybody was fired up. It was noisy in 76, but then you sort of, it's like you expect success. The anticipation of success is no longer a surprise. And I think a lot of people just do kind of sit, tend to, you know, wait for stuff to happen rather than,
yeah,
you know, trying to really participate that much. I think it's just kind of one of these human nature things. But it's been that way with Pats fans, I think, for a while.
I think you're right. All right, thanks for the call, Al.
It's interesting, you know, about the late 70s. I wouldn't know. I don't know if you do you remember that?
Sure.
When they got good and, you know, that was really loud and then maybe it kind of leveled off. Because they were good for a few years there.
Yep.
Well, he was a Jets fan at the time, wasn't he?
Oh, that's right. Fred was,
yeah, you know. Or Broncos fan. Which one? I forget.
I think that's interesting. I never really thought of that.
Wyatt Dodge, the Alaskan Cowboy, says that he bought two tickets to the Patriots at Seattle at the 40-yard line, front row, cost $750. Yet Seattle is still loud. That's my point. I think it's a culture. I think it's enthusiasm. I think, you know, New England fans they tend to be a little bit laid back.
Well, I do also think it's easy for a guy who doesn't have tickets to say, if I had the money and I could get there, I'd be loud every week. I'm not sure he'd actually be loud every week. I mean, that's easy to say. I know I wouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, I'm being...
It's exhausting.
Yeah, I don't have it. I'm like Matt says, I can cheer for 10 seconds. You're not going to get 45 out of
well,
me.
You, and you guys... You
on
know,
a consistent basis,
right.
too.
You've made fun of me. I told you, I wasn't one of those, you know, wild guys in the stands, you know, screaming and yelling at every play either. So, I think the crowd is quiet, but... I would have been one of those people that people said was quiet because that's how that I went to every game. I was a season ticket holder, and when it was when something happened, I responded to it. But I didn't stand there, you know, for you know hours on end screaming and yelling my head off, you know, on defense and all that stuff. When it was a big time in the game and you needed to stop, you got into it. But certainly wasn't anything like what they do, in Seattle or Kansas City.
Well, that's the way it should be.
No, I'm not. I'm not arguing with you, but I'm just saying I can't be hypocritical.
So then, move to Seattle or Kansas City.
Don't talk with your mouth full. All right, Kevin, you ready? Food's here. Let's take a break, and when we come back, a lot of emails. We'll get right to them.
Introducing the Droid Bionic by Motorola. So powerful it can access your home computer remotely and pull out your music, movies, images, and documents at the mind-melting speed of Horizon 4G LTE. The Droid Bionic. It's not only the master of droids, it's the master of machines. Control it, and you control everything.
Get the new Droid Bionic by Motorola and never sync with a cord again. Visit any Verizon store, droiddoes.com, or call 1-800-256-4646. Coverage details at verizonwireless.com/4GLTE.
Transmission?
Root canal.
Central valve?
Towaway zone.
Obedience school. Set. Uh-oh. Oh, dear.
Life is full of unexpected expenses.
Study abroad?
An exterminator?
Sleepaway camp?
Engaged?
He fractured what?
Pay for your mother's flight?
Yeah, why? You got a problem with that?
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Bank of America can help you be ready for them.
Guitar.
Piano.
Tuba lessons.
Twins.
Did what on the new carpet?
Let Bank of America help you build a buffer. Regularly set aside money with automatic transfers from checking to savings. You choose how much money to move and how often.
She made Nationals. Great. Where are Nationals? Oh.
Automatic transfers to savings. One of the many ways Bank of America can help you stay on budget. Learn more at bankofamerica.com/solutions.
Honey, look, I bought a new Vaz.
Oops. Nice.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. Copyright 2010 Bank of America Corporation.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Story Time every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Dear business traveler who's flying away, you can get more out of your working day with plush leather seats including legroom galore to stretch out your knees, feet, and more. Plus 36 channels of DirecTV in your seat gives you something to watch once work is complete. Log on at JetBlue.com or call for an experience dedicated to you above all. My name is Edwin, and I'm a JetBlue crew member.
And that was a dedication to you from JetBlue. Experience it firsthand at JetBlue.com/business. Based on the average fleet-wide seat pitch of U.S. Airlines, DirecTV service available on flights in 48 contiguous states only.
And now, story time with Fred Kirsch.
I had this dream. I was in this, it was sort of like a cafeteria setting with big glass windows. And a lot of people there were people that we worked with and like on the travel party. So we're looking and there's this weather coming and it's like dark clouds and it turns into this tornado. So I'm like, everybody get away from the windows. We get away from the windows and trees are coming down, but luckily nothing happened. So then that passes and then we decide that, okay, dinner is coming soon, but a lot of us wanted to work out after dinner, so this cafeteria turns into a hotel. And now a lot of us have to go up in the elevator to get our gym stuff, because after we eat, we're gonna work out. So we get in the elevator, and it's a bunch of people, and one of them's Gino. And Gino has no pants on, Gino Capoletti. and his unit is attached to his hip.
Hello.
And it was like,
hello.
It was like a weird deformity, like that no one ever knew about, but there it was. It's like, and my thoughts going through my mind was, how does he like explain that to women?
Why are you having dreams about Gino's unit?
Thanks, babe. It was hang attached to his hip.
I don't care where it's attached. Why are you thinking about his unit?
I don't know. It was just a weird dream.
That was story time with Fred Kirsch.
Next week, you're going to tell Gino this story, right? Please.
No. And you better not bring it up either. All right, back here in PFW in Progress, 508-298-0398 is the Ace Ticket Hotline. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. Talking about fan noise, same old story that we always have, but it's a good, lively off-season topic. Talking about Patrick Chung, is he worth $7 million? I don't know. Troy Brown, officially a member now of the Patriots Hall of Fame. They'll have that induction in early September. I don't know the exact date, but...
I got one more thing I can throw into the mix off of today. Boston Herald story, Jeff Howe talked to Kevin Falk. And Kevin is still sort of clinging to that dream of coming back for another season with New England. Hasn't heard anything from the team. But he still very much is preparing himself to play and wants to play. Should they bring him back?
Well that is news, because before, up to this point, what we've heard is he was undecided. But it sounds like Kevin Falk has decided he wants to come back for another year.
If it's here, right? Yeah. He's not committed to playing anywhere, right?
No.
He just wants to play
but
here.
I don't think we had heard that up to this point.
I'll tell you what.
Well, we had a little while ago. But.
Let's say that Joseph Addai doesn't work out.
Well, that's why I think
is that a possibility?
Oh yeah, I think that's the only reason it's still up in the air, is because you have one old injured guy who's already injured, who missed OTAs last week, and you have two completely or virtually unproven young guys. If they had brought in, you know, somebody who'd never been hurt, you know, not Joseph Addai, but you know, the three guys they worked out aren't really good examples because they've all had injury histories. But if they just brought in, you know, Corey Dillon, well, there'd be no story. You have your young guys, you have your old guys, he never gets hurt. The door is closed on Kevin Falk, but I think the door is a little bit ajar.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Now, I don't know how much he has left. That's the problem.
And I wonder if he would extend that into the season. Like, let's say he doesn't go to camp, doesn't start the season with the team, but then midway, you know, October, November, they have some issues at running back. Maybe they say, we could use a hand.
I could
see it.
You could.
Yeah. I think that's part of the reason why the Patriots probably haven't had much communication, is because I think they're feeling like he's there for them. They know what their situation is. Now, if Andy's right, if something happens to Addai and he's not available, then maybe that changes the urgency. Or maybe they want to look at some of these fullbacks, you know, a guy like Catani, who a lot of different people seem to be writing very specifically that he's not just a fullback, he's a running back, and maybe he can do some of the things that you got out of like Heath Evans in the past, where he could run the ball on occasion. I don't know. Maybe one of these guys that we don't know much about, Brandon Bolden. Is his name Brandon?
Yes.
You know, one of these guys, you know, that we don't really know a whole lot about emerges, and that sort of lessens the need for anybody else. But if not, and you're down to sort of 2 second year guys that are kind of questionable, and a third down back and Danny Woodhead, Adai's not available, then, you know, why not bring Kevin Falk back?
I agree.
I would say it's a long shot at this point, but I think health can certainly change that picture in a hurry.
Robin in Alaska talking about Eugene Chung. He says, no way the Patriots pay Chung $7 million unless he plays out of his mind this year. And even then, it's unlikely. Up to now, Chung has one Ed Reed game, and that was against Miami in his second year. To get $7 million, you have to have those types of games on a regular basis. $7 million is for game changers, not nice little players, to use a PFW-ism.
I would say there is 0.0 chance that they give him that money, because if he plays out of his bunghole this year, they'll franchise him. Now, I know you have the Welker thing and everybody, but they won't give him, you know, 6 years, $42 million or whatever. That is not going to happen, even if he wins Defensive Player of the Year this year. That is not happening, because he hasn't done anything with enough consistency to warrant a long-term $7 million type deal.
Cavern in Gainesville, I'm thankful to be able to listen live and actually write in. Been a while, but I haven't missed a show. My question is about the defensive backs. Seems like Denard, barring legal troubles, has the talent to be a starter. Between Arrington and Moore, who is in jeopardy of not making the final 53? Personally, I think it's Arrington. Moore, towards the end of the season, was our best defensive back, or seemed to be in position to make plays on the ball.
No chance Kyle Arrington gets cut.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
No chance.
I think they like him here a lot.
I'm with Andy. 0% chance.
He's been your most consistent corner for two seasons, basically. Consistent.
Don't everybody
go and say I said he's Ty Law or anybody. Consistent. When you've turned to him, he's been what he's been. Not great, but competitive and out there and helping you. I don't see there's any, but I don't get the question either. So we have McCourty is a lock. Dowling is a lock if he's healthy. He's not getting cut. Denard is a lock if healthy, I think.
I would agree. I think Arrington's a lock.
And Arrington's a lock. And what was the question?
He thinks Dennard, I think that's the way our media relations department has told us.
Yes, Dennard.
That's how he pronounces his name. If Dennard, he believes is a starting caliber player. Now, I am not of the belief that a rookie second-round pick, I'll call him, is a starting caliber player sight unseen. Now, maybe he turns out to be that. I was sort of wishy-washy on his tape. I didn't think I read a lot of stuff about him in particular because, you know, Andy made me go to the combine this year, and I actually had to do something during the pre-draft process, which I'm not accustomed to. A lot of people had sort of talked about the absence of Prince Amukamara and how that affected him when, you know, he didn't have that star on the other side. It put more pressure on him. Now, maybe as a pro, he doesn't have that. I don't know. I'm not saying he can't play. He's clearly a talented guy. He was, by all accounts, a second-round talent, second, third-round at worst. So I'm not ready to say he's a starter. And with Sterling Moore, I think this guy was a great story. I'm not ready to say he is a frontline NFL player either.
I mean, he was the reason why
he made a great play
because he was targeted.
But he made a great play in the AFC Championship
game. But Devin McCourty was targeted all year.
But let me ask you this.
When did he make plays?
Let me ask you this, though. On, you know, I don't mean this to be
critical.
Here's
where he hates on Sterling
Moore. No, because I don't want to. I don't even want to say it because I know that's how it's going to come out.
That's how I'm going to perceive it.
Sterling Moore made some really nice plays down the stretch of the season. He made a terrific play against Buffalo late in that game. It was as good a play as you can make. But the play against Baltimore, what happened? How do we perceive Sterling Moore if he did the same thing? Sterling Moore turns around, rakes at the ball, and unlike Lee Evans, the receiver just holds on to the ball. How do we perceive Sterling Moore right now?
I would perceive him the same way. I would say he was competitive. He was their best corner over the end of the season, and he was competitive, which is something McCourty was not.
I thought he made a lot. That's why I said I don't want to make it out to be this negative thing.
I wouldn't look at him any differently.
I thought he did terrific, but don't you think that people have elevated him to a spot that he really wasn't in? He was, what, our fourth corner?
But see, I've elevated the fact that he was the best corner. I think he was their best corner over the last
month of the season.
I'll tell
you, there's a lot of plays in the Super Bowl where, you know, as Fred said, you know, he had a lot of opportunities because they targeted him a lot, and he got beat a lot.
Yeah,
but I think only people remember the plays that he made.
I would continue to say that I think the same thing is true about Arrington. I think the same thing is true about McCourty.
Yeah, I think McCourty.
I think he made more plays down the stretch than any of the corners on the team.
I think McCourty for sure. McCourty struggled. I mean, there's no two ways about it. He struggled all season. I think Arrington played much better than Sterling Moore.
I think he did a good
job. And I don't think
Arrington,
as you said, you know, I'm not making Arrington out to be Ty Law or anything either. I mean, I just think that he was their best corner last year.
All year, yes.
Twitter's a buzz right now asking you if Eugene Chung and Patrick Chung will make the team.
I caught that. I let it go one of the rare times I showed discretion.
I think Patrick has a better chance, but I wouldn't rule out Eugene. He doesn't have a lot of tread on his tires.
No, but back to the question is, how many corners? It's a numbers question is the bigger issue, regardless of who you think is good or what's the number.
So what do we have? We had Arrington, McCourty, Dennard.
Dowling. Arrington.
I said Arrington, McCourty, Dennard, Dowling, and Moore. That's five. I can keep five.
And how many safeties?
Well, you got to figure
Chung,
Gregory, and Wilson.
Yeah.
I can't see a second round pick getting cut.
Right. What about a seventh? If we pretend Dennard is a second.
And pretend and Wilson.
We didn't cut a second. We cut a seventh.
So that's eight defensive backs, so there's definitely room for at least one more.
Some of those guys are versatile. I still think there's a chance more. I think there's a chance Dowling are safety-like responsibilities.
Well, Moore played safety last year at times.
Right.
Wilson has plenty of experience playing corner in college.
And plenty of guys with versatility.
So,
can they play? I don't know.
I think those eight are locks.
Yeah, I think they're all going to be on the team.
Now, who else? You know, I don't know. But I think those eight are locks. Who?
Yeah, that's a good
question. Will Allen.
That's a good question.
Will Allen is probably not a lock.
Will he or won't he?
But he's another guy that
Is it the PFW curse?
During OTAs,
you saw him play a little. He's like a year 12 veteran. It's not a curse if he gets
it. A lot of players getting cut, too, if that were the case.
Well, Fred thinks everybody who's ever appeared on the show is going to get cut or injured or traded.
Mayo's the only one safe.
Yeah.
Sticking with the defensive backfield, Patrick writes in,
Chung.
Happy offseason, guys and Eric. My question is regarding Tavon Wilson. Do you guys see him or Stephen Gregory starting at safety this
year? Gregory.
Personally, I think Gregory starts and Wilson takes over at some point.
Nope.
I know in today's NFL, the classic conventional starting positions are only relevant on first down for the most part. It just seems odd that they would invest such a high draft pick on such a critical area of need just to have him warming the bench. I also understand that most of their second-round picks in the Belichick era don't pan out, Gronk and Branch not included. Also, do you see him playing corner a lot this year, too, seeing how he played corner for most of his collegiate career? To me, he's their most intriguing pick. I watch a lot of NCAA football and caught a few Illinois games and don't remember him standing out good or bad. I'll end with you guys, most notably Fred, picking on Paul for being a disco fan and him going to the disco clubs all decked out back in the day. Fred's old enough, and I can picture him looking like Disco Stew from The Simpsons, getting jiggy with it to Andy Gibb, shadow dancing circa 1978, maybe even testing his tip hand with some disco ladies with some ironic foreshadowing. Example, hey ladies, would you like to come back to my place and check out my alpaca farm? Or at the very least, tell them you're a farmer to a blind, one-eyed pig and see where it goes from there. You guys help make the offseason feel like the regular season.
Shaved.
Keep up the great work. You too, Eric. And, of course, congrats to Troy Brown, who exemplified what it was to be a Patriot. Peace and love and hair grease, PFWIP crew.
Okay, are you done burping?
Yes.
Well, to get back to the football portion of that email early on, the starting free safeties are not guys that come off the field. So whether it's Gregory, whether it's Wilson, who is a corner/safety, so I would deem him a free safety. Those are the guys you need more of, not less of. They don't come off the field. So, yes, they start and they stay on the field as much as possible. But I think Gregory, he started the last 2 years in San Diego. They gave him starting money, If he's not starting, that's a bust of a free agent signing. I mean, it's not a $50 million bust. It's only $12 million or whatever it is.
Still
a bust. They signed him to be a starter.
They gave him.
You didn't sign him to be a backup.
Serious money for what he is.
So I don't. I mean, I think he starts the year, and I expect him to finish the year as the starter unless he's a severe disappointment.
Okay. So you look at Chung and Gregory. Are you starting,
safeties?
Yeah.
To me, you have definitive starting safeties going into the season. You also have, and I talked about this last week, I forgot about Barrett, started the year as your starting safety. He's back.
I forgot he was on the roster.
Me too. He really slips under the radar.
And he's a guy that has a reputation of being very, very good on special teams. I know he had a bigger role than that last year before he got hurt. So that might give him a leg up as a ninth guy that we could put in that list. But
well, the bottom line is
Sergio Brown is a guy who's going to be really in a fight for a roster spot.
Long gone and hard to find. 0.0 chance of making the team.
Barrett's interesting. He should be a beast. He's the biggest defensive back they have. He's almost linebacker size.
Yep.
You know,
good athlete. He's just
very good athlete. He just gets hurt too much.
You'd think that they could use him in that role that Belichick seems to really be searching for, you know, as far back as Tank Williams.
The big nickel.
You know, and there's been a lot of talk about that with, you know, almost like a pseudo linebacker where, they're using him in a variety of ways. He has that kind of size and athleticism. You know, I think durability is certainly a question. He's been hurt virtually his entire career.
That's what I wanted to make Trevor Scott into.
Except he's a hybrid defensive end outside linebacker, not a safety. You know what I'd like to have? Less versatility and more talent. I want guys, and I've said this, I want guys that are pigeonholed into one thing and they do it really well.
Like
I don't
quotient.
Care that they can all, oh, this guy can play four positions, this guy can play five. Play one. Ed Reed, he plays one position.
And do it
one
well.
Single
Patriots
position.
Have their share of those guys.
Who? Tom Brady.
Who?
Wes Welker, Tom Brady. Vince Wilfork, Gerard Mayo. You know.
Okay.
I don't even really buy the Wilfork one necessarily. He played every line, every defensive line.
Yeah, Rob
Gronkowski.
Rob Gronkowski.
Rob Gronkowski. So, I mean, that's more than most teams.
Yeah.
Let him run defense. I don't know about that.
Yeah, the help.
At
is,
that high level?
The help is needed more on the other side of the ball.
At that high level, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I don't know about that.
Wow.
I think the Patriots.
Gronkowski's no
the
good
Patriots.
Anymore.
No. Gronkowski, yes, but I don't think
Brady,
all of those.
Yes.
I don't think all
Wilfork,
of those.
Wilfork, yes.
I don't think Wilfork or Mayo.
Wow, no Wilfork.
I don't think Wilfork or Mayo are the best at what they do.
I don't know what games you're
watching. I think the Patriots' strength is in numbers.
The
not
ones
in,
where
not
they give up
talent.
550 yards on defense every week.
Thank you.
Those games.
Thank you, Andy Hart.
Well, I'm sorry. I have
thank
to
you, Mike
to the table occasionally. I don't know what games you're watching.
No, my point is I think the Patriots' strength is in numbers, not in high-end talent.
But
it's not a criticism, it works.
The strength that the reason your strength is in numbers is because you don't have 11. As Bill said, I called 34 cover 2 every damn down with the Giants. He didn't need 17 starters or 20 starters on defense.
Yeah, but what
he
team has that these days?
Some teams have more of it. I'm not saying every team starts 11 guys.
It's different.
Excuse me.
It's different now than the 80s.
It's different now cuz there's not enough talent on defense. That's why it's different. Right?
It's different because of the salary cap. It's different because of a lot of things.
It's different
because
you don't have talent.
No, it's...
Every week they lined up Seymour, Warren, Wilfork. Behind them was Brewski, Vrabel, McGinnis. Behind them was Law, Harrison, Samuel. There was no rotating. There was no, we got to have 19 guys play defense. We had about 14 because the 14 were really freaking good.
There was the salary cap. There was no salary cap then.
But I thought that's... Now you got to pick and choose. There was no salary cap. There was a salary cap. That's why it's more impressive.
Wait a minute. It was 2003?
And as soon as Samuel was ready to get his big contract, they had to get rid of him.
But that's... I don't know why you think we're making fun of anybody. We're not.
What are you talking?
The Patriots have chosen to let those guys go.
Chosen.
I corrected myself. You don't have to jump all over me. Thank you. Uh-huh. But they've chosen to let those guys go because they don't necessarily believe in the importance of having the best player at every spot. They would rather have guys that can filter in if there's injuries. Have a big drop off.
But I'm saying that no team in the NFL can have the best guy at every spot. You just can't.
But I don't know why. Why do you have to take it?
But why do you take it to
a referendum on what the other teams
you
do?
You have to spread the talent. That's how you.
Is
you
anything
no,
that
that's
I just
what
said,
the Patriots
well,
do?
That's
Fred.
How you sustain success.
That's
in
what the
NFL.
Patriots do.
All teams have to do it.
But that's not true, is
Patriots
what I'm saying.
Just do it
the Colts
than
didn't.
Other
the Colts chose not to do it that way, and they didn't get burned until they lost their quarterback.
yeah, but you can't say that the Colts had the best player at every position.
At every position, no. They had more high-end talent than the Patriots. Listen.
Really?
He's really frustrating.
Yes, really.
Oh, come on. Please.
When did anybody say anything about having the best player at every position? I just listed you a defense.
You guys did.
No, I didn't. See. Yes, I did.
I didn't.
Mean, no, I didn't. I listed you a defense.
I need Paul from L.A.
No, listen. Listen. Was Asante Samuel the best corner?
No.
No. Was Rodney Harrison the best safety? No. Was Mike Vrabel the best outside linebacker?
No.
1 year.
Well, one year.
I got to give it to him 1 year. Was Teddy Bruschi the best inside linebacker? No. Never. None of those guys were the best. But you had 11 to whatever it was, 14 guys who played all the time because they were very good. They were starting caliber players. This defense has about 4 starting caliber players.
And
if you ask Matt Light, it's only 3.
And I want to reiterate, this is not a criticism. This is the way the Patriots have designed their
that's
team.
That's kind of a criticism.
I'm criticizing.
No, it is a criticism.
I'm saying, you're not that good on defense because your players aren't that good.
We wouldn't be talking about it unless you guys didn't like
it's
it.
No.
They didn't choose to do this. This has nothing to do with the Patriots. They didn't choose for Jermaine Cunningham to suck when they drafted him in the second round. They didn't choose for Ron Brace to suck when they drafted him in the second round. They didn't choose for Darius Butler to suck when they drafted him in the second round. They've drafted guys high on defense who haven't panned out. That's why they do not have 11 capable starters on defense.
I won't speak.
But that's nothing about, you know, spending all this money to get the best talent.
See, this
where does he get this
the money?
From?
This is what I'm saying.
He hear?
It's not a crit.
There's this, like this,
this
thing
is a
that
criticism.
Translates it. I say one thing, he hears something different.
I don't want to speak for Andy, okay? But what
Fred
I'm
is
saying
skinny.
Is
Fred is fat, and that's what he must hear.
The fact that
know.
They've chosen not to hold on to the guys that were successful because of money is not a criticism to me. This their
it
philosophy.
Sounds like it, though.
No, what I'm the talent is the criticism, Fred. They haven't replaced those guys with similarly
that.
Talented
but,
individuals.
But,
so it's all well and good if you decide to Law and Samuel go. Right. But if you replace them with Eric Warfield and Dwayne
that.
Starks, you're not better off.
Okay, and the free agents. I agree with that, and I agree with what Andy said. You know, they thought Jermaine Cunningham could play. That's a swing and a miss.
Right. That's
a swing
but
and a miss.
But that's where Andy's criticizing
all
them.
I'm criticizing
not because
of
their philosophical of approach.
I don't care how they get the talent.
Right.
They have a lack of talent.
But
let Mike Vrabel retire.
About,
trade Mike
out,
Vrabel.
It
but
sounds,
make sh-
it, when you guys started this out, it sounded like, you know, it was the Patriots' philosophy that you were criticizing.
No.
No, it wasn't.
I keep saying it's not.
Well,
I have some criticism
See,
of their philosophy.
I said I'm not speaking for
Andy. They can sign.
I'm speaking for myself.
They clearly believe.
Because he's the most vociferous about this, then, you know.
Careful, you're getting a book. That's how I ended up in a book. Remember that stupid idiot professor book or whatever? I think they have a philosophy of we can sign 5 Jags and one of them will hit. There's a good chance. There's a better chance if we sign 5 Jags, one of them be good, then we could miss on the
but
good
But you're
guy.
Right, but that philosophy is tied in, and this is where they miss. In drafting well. If you don't draft well, that philosophy falls
but
flat
that's,
in his face.
But that's Andy's point.
And you failed drafting, so maybe you can't use your JAG theory to fill in. Maybe you can't afford to just have Trevor Scott starting.
All those guys that you mentioned, you know, McGinnis and Bruschi and Law,
were drafted by someone else.
Well, but they were draft picks. You know what I'm saying? They were all drafted.
Yes.
You know, by the team that they were excelling on.
Right. But not all of them. I mean, Rodney Harrison you hit on. Mike Vrabel you hit on. You acquired guys in different ways.
Right.
My point
was Mike Vrabel.
You didn't have to have a lot of players because the players you had that started and played were good.
Were good.
And don't tell me, oh, they had Matt Chatham come in. You didn't win because Matt Chatham came in off the bench and recovered a fumble once. You won because you had a great core of talent on defense.
You also hit that naked guy running in the Super Bowl.
What are you laughing at?
I'm
ready to turn my fire to you if you got something to say.
No, just the fact that you bring up a random fumble recovery by Matt Chatham.
That's what people like to pretend about.
No,
like,
I know.
They're so good because Matt Chatham
was great. No, but they romanticize players because of one individual player. And that's kind of what I was talking about earlier with Sterling Moore.
To me, it sounds silly when you guys make this argument, or I should say Andy because I don't want to speak for Paul.
What argument, first of all?
But I don't think that you're making the same argument.
Criticizing the Patriots' philosophy.
Yeah.
I think their philosophy.
Philosophy
has made
them the most winning team in the last decade
with Tom Brady.
No, see, it hasn't. This is where I would argue
it
with you.
Hasn't?
We've argued with you 8,000 times. You don't agree. That's fine. We disagree. I think that your philosophy is fine when you have the best coach and the best quarterback in the game. Talk to me when those two things aren't in place about the philosophy.
Any philosophy in the NFL will work if you are right in your talent and valuation. Doesn't it all come down to that? Whether you're picking guys in free agent or drafting them. It all comes down to your evaluation of talent.
Yes, you need talent.
And if you swing and miss, I don't care what philosophy you have.
But what you're missing from me, not Andy, from me, is I don't have a problem if you want to dump Mike Vrabel in that trade with Matt Cassel. But you can't draft Jermaine Cunningham to replace him. That's not a philosophy argument.
No,
that's a talent evaluation.
That's what I just said.
Okay, and now there's a million different examples I could use individually for that. Richard Seymour, they've been looking for that Richard Seymour guy ever since they traded him. So if you want to have your philosophy, I agree with Andy. I would rather take the talent that I know I have and try my best to hold on to it. They wouldn't. But that's fine as long as you have the best coach and quarterback in football. You're able to overcome
that.
They already had that.
And I know you disagree with me, Paul, but my point in the NFL as far as that last thing about holding on to all your talent, you can't do it anymore. No team
does.
Not
all of your talent. Important cogs in the machine.
You have to make decisions.
Yeah, and I think they've made bad ones.
And sometimes they do.
But I've said it a million times.
But they've also made more good ones.
$4 million to Tully Bantakane and $3 million to James Sanders.
Every team
and sign all these Jags.
But what I'm saying is your philosophy would be hurting you a lot more if you weren't being able to overcome it with what you have with Belichick and Brady. That's what I'm saying. With that defense the last 3 years, they would not have been a playoff team with an average coach and an average quarterback. But no one knows that because they're so damn good. Bill is so good at what he does on the field, and Tom is so good running this offense that they're able to still be a perennial contender.
I mean, last year,
to be commended for that. I don't know why you think that's a criticism.
And last year, if you look at last year individually, because it was really the depths of that defense, I don't think that they start off the season thinking, man, we got a terrible defensive backfield.
No.
We saw that was like an evolution and a scramble to make good with what we had left after certain decisions were made because they felt, if I stick with what we got, we're going to be even worse than what we ended up with. And so, I mean, that season was very unique. And someday, again, we go back to, you know, when Belichick retires, it would be nice if he just opened up. I'd love to hear what he thought about all the moves that happened, you know, from the summer right to the end of the year and how they had a scramble to make things work and why.
But it's what I said last week. Everybody points to Sanders and Merriweather. We forget they anointed Barrett and Dowling as their starting defensive backs, two of their four.
And Dowling
lost them
hurt.
In the first.
Right.
They both did.
Right.
They both went on IR within a month.
It was a scramble.
So it's not even – there was an issue with injuries and depth and all that, but it wasn't the glamorous one of Merriweather and say, oh, you cut those guys, or even Bodden.
I'm talking.
You chose starters, and the guys you chose got hurt.
Right. And,
so then you were really covering your ass.
I think last year was unique. Scott, New Jersey.
It sucks so bad they went to the Super Bowl.
But I didn't say that. You did.
I know. I said
it was unique. What is that? How does that translate?
In what way? As I have my chocolate chip cookie.
Talk with your mouth.
I just think the series of events that led to the final personnel grouping in that defensive backfield was unique.
But
you made some decisions.
You had a wide receiver playing.
Some decisions were forced.
Not unique.
Some decisions.
Unfortunately, not unique for us.
He asked me a question. He doesn't let me answer.
Sorry. I'm sorry. You're right. I was. I talked while you were talking.
Some of the decisions were forced because of injury. Other decisions you didn't have to make, but you made them because you thought it was for the better of the team. More of the environment, the locker room, character.
But my question to that is, what makes that unique? He's done that in the past.
But then you blend it with what you thought you were going to have didn't end up being that because of injury. So you made moves, and then now even those moves couldn't work because – guys you thought you had, you didn't have. And then I think in the case of a Merriweather, I think that, you know, he was the last of all of them to go, really.
Well, Bodden.
Was Bodden the last one? I think those two guys probably were technically better than what you had, as bad as we thought.
You're right.
But he got rid of them anyway.
But here's the cold, hard facts. They were every bit as bad on the field with those guys the year before.
No, but
because their secondary wasn't any worse than it was last year.
But I'm still saying that.
They were terrible.
They got
2 years
rid of
ago.
Those guys, even though
I think
though
they were terrible.
Guys,
Infinity last year.
They got rid of those guys, even though probably in a moment of honesty they would say, "Yeah, they're better than who we have on the bench or who's available in free agency." But we got to get rid of them anyway. I think all those things combined to make it very unique personnel wise for the back seven.
Well, yeah, I think he went with the theory. I think Barrett can play. He's going to have a learning curve. I think Dowling can play. He's going to have a learning curve.
and they never got the learning curve. I think he probably said, we sucked last year with Merriweather, Sanders, and Baden. We can suck for a month or two with these guys, and I think down the road they'll be better. Once they get their lumps out of the way, he never got to that point because they got hurt and they were off the field and got to the scrambling point. And he also didn't expect McCourty to suck.
Right.
That's the big.
And we said that going in, that to me, that's the biggest thing that contributed to that defense not being where we thought it would be, was because he was the guy, one of the guys you counted on. Right. Him, Will Fork, and Mayo. You know?
So. Chunk, according to Light.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Not according to us, though. He wasn't the guy that we mentioned. You know, at the
How would you compare it to 03 when they let Lawyer Malloy go?
There's no chance.
No, well, I'm going to explain it. When they let Lawyer Malloy go, and certainly had no way of knowing, you know, 1 week in that their replacement for Lawyer Malloy was not going to be able to play, like Antoine Harris was so bad, and they had to scramble around. How would you compare it to that situation?
I think a lot less movement in the personnel. I mean, it's one guy. I mean,
It was two guys.
Yeah, but this was a lot more than two guys.
Okay.
You know? And I think the rest...
It's a lot more than two guys because the guys you had can't play. Well, the difference is that Rodney Harrison was great. And Ty Law was great.
Yeah, yeah. And we thought
the guys
McCourty,
that you had here were
we thought
were good.
McCourty was going to be great, and he wasn't. You know,
wasn't good.
You know, we thought McCourty was the rising Ty Law. You know, so and he wasn't, and that was a big that changed everything. I think it did.
Would you be more surprised if McCourty comes out and is as bad as he was last year?
Or as good as he was as a rookie.
Yeah, I don't think either will happen. I don't think they'll allow him to be as bad. They'll get him off the field when they see signs of that. I think they'll put him back at safety.
Well, I'm not saying that they'll let him play the whole season that way, but if he starts to play as bad as he did last year, will you be more surprised at that, or more surprised if he starts to come back and play like he did this
I'll
first
be more
year?
Surprised if I'll be more you'll be more surprised if he's as bad.
I think that was horrific. Horrific. And I can't imagine that a guy who was forget his rookie year. Forget how good he was. I don't care about that. Erase that from your memory. The guy was good enough in college to be a first-round pick. He was going to be a consensus first-round pick. How does he overnight can't compete at an NFL level? I mean, he literally could not compete last year. He sucked.
Some good tennis going on.
Djokovic in trouble again. Yeah.
Against Paul Tsongas.
The Tsonga guy is a pretty good player.
He's a five. One should beat a five.
So Paul according Provo, to the Wilson Hart Power Index
formula,
yeah,
no, but it's a good discussion.
I think it's a great question.
I think it'd be stunning if he sucked.
I think it's like Fred says, it's probably going to end up seeking its own level. He'll be in the middle somewhere. But if I had to say one way or the other, what would I be more surprised? I would probably be more surprised if he played as badly as he did last year. Because
see, you know what?
I think it's statistically
the worst year for a corner ever, wasn't it?
I don't know. I think
it was
the
up
guy
there.
On the Packers yeah. passed him late.
It was up there, and that's
I thought that was total defense.
He was the first to give up, for the last 3 years of Pro Football Focus had done it, 1,000 yards through the air.
Because I think
and
he was
the other
really
guy
good.
Blew by him.
I think he was really good his rookie year, but I don't think it was like Darrell Revis good.
No.
That's my point. He was the opposite of Darrell Revis bad. You know, whatever the worst you can totally measure a corner by, he was that.
Sergio Brown bad at corner.
To me, the extremes.
For 16 games.
He was, you know, worse, as Magic would say, more bad, you know, than he was good.
Yeah.
Right. If that makes sense. That's why I say I'd be more surprised.
I don't think he was great.
I'd be more surprised
he was
if he's
good.
That bad.
He was good.
Yeah,
and he played on a good team.
That's what I'm
and
saying.
And he had interceptions, and that's how your perception is you're great.
Right. And he played
last
very well.
Last year, there was no perception. He sucked.
Well, I think that this year, I think three things can happen. He'll be okay.
John Dennis here.
He'll be all right.
Good topic you just sprung.
Eric doesn't take part, but I'm watching the French Open. It's thrilling.
Match point
he's
number four
just everything
Zonga.
From France with
he's
you.
Pining. He's
you
pining
cry?
To the back.
Oh, cry. Oh, there's a clay court. Why don't you cry?
When I saw Stade Roland Garros, I cried.
I think that McCourty could be okay this year. I don't think he's ever going to be the guy that we thought he was going to be after his rookie season.
Why?
I just don't think if you have that type of talent to be the next Ty Law, you don't have a second season like he had.
The great Ty Law.
But did he surpass?
Well, if there's something we don't know about, okay.
Well, here's the thing, Fred. Did he unfairly raise his own expectations with his level of play in the
well,
first
we,
year?
maybe unfairly raised the level of expectation.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah. So
no, he was a first round corner. He should be a Pro Bowler.
I'd be more surprised.
No, but that should be the expectation. Okay. He's a Pro Bowl talent.
I'd be more surprised if he comes back to that level of expectation that we put on him than if he really has a bad season. Hmm. That's why I'd be more surprised at that.
So you think that was a bad pick?
Terrible pick then.
I think he'll be an okay.
If his talent, if his physical ability is a crappy corner, that was a terrible
first round
pick. You
shouldn't have picked him in the first round.
Well, you picked him, what was he, 27th?
You picked him in the first round. Don't give me a what was he.
No, I think if he has a 10-year career and he's fine, that's fine.
Whoa. If he's closer to what he was last year,
No.
He won't have a 10-year career.
That's not what I said. I said that.
Even Eric agrees you said that, and he's the unbiased one.
I said he'll probably just be, he'll be okay. But I don't think he's going to come to the level of expectation that we put on
him. And you said closer to last year.
No, I didn't say that. If I did, I misspoke.
You said you thought he would be, you'd be surprised if he was.
I'd be more, if I had to choose between the two extremes, yes. I'd be more surprised if he comes to that level.
The answer
but
is
I don't
in the
have
middle
to choose
somewhere.
Between those two extremes.
Well, that's the question. Yeah. You have to choose between the two
Fred
extremes.
Fred doesn't have to do anything he doesn't want to do.
And my answer was I'd be more surprised.
No, I know. Yeah, I know. But that was Eric's question. What would you be more surprised?
Right.
Because a repeat of last year or a repeat of
this
year?
I also think if he starts out repeating last year, we won't have a chance to see.
So they'll bench a captain. You think he'll be a captain again?
That's a good question.
Well, it depends on his teammates vote
for him. Well, I think maybe Chung takes over. Because remember last year we were saying, oh, Chung looks like he might have taken that step, and then we were surprised and McCourty got it.
But I don't know if you want to give Chung that captaincy when he's looking for $7 million
a year. That's a good point.
Now he's looking for $7 million. I was going to say, I don't know if you want a captain who's going to be out of the lineup for 8 weeks.
No, that was once.
With McCourty, how much do you think that shoulder injury affected him? Because he was
No, it was before the shoulder injury.
Oh yeah,
the shoulder injury came very late. He was terrible before the shoulder injury.
The shoulder injury came in November against the Jets.
It could be injury related, but it's not the shoulder. It's a knee.
Yeah,
it's
the
a back.
Problem
it's
with
a
McCourty,
something else.
It wasn't like you know not being able to hit because he tackled fine.
But I actually think the shoulder injury is the reason they moved him to safety.
The problem was he.
I think they were trying to protect his shoulder.
He was getting beat on long patterns where what we thought was great about him in his first year was the instincts to know, you know, when to turn, how to keep hip to hip.
Right, he lost all his ball skills.
Whatever you want to call it. Yeah, I mean.
Double move.
What we loved about him in that first year is exactly what we didn't see in the second year. He could still hit. He was still a good hitter.
Yeah,
still fast.
Andy used to make fun of me when I said he's a really good tackler. And he'd go, yeah, it's great. We got a run support corner.
It's kind of like when we had a run stuffing pass rusher in Adalys Thomas as our outside linebacker.
Right. But that is part of it, being able to support the run, and he still did that well. But the thing that was going to make him great, we thought, was his cover skills, obviously.
And it made him crappy, because if
and
he can just play the run
struggled.
In this league, he won't play. He's what you said. He'll be out of the lineup if
and
you don't play the run at corner.
It is almost like a guy would do that double move. He'd look into the quarterback, and the guy would just lose him.
I was more amazed with how many times guys just ran by him. Yeah. You know, starting in that Detroit preseason game and really never stopping.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying he didn't make any good plays during the course of the year. He did. But consistently, guys ran by him, whether it was a double move or not.
Yeah.
And I want to emphasize, it was a horrendous season, and he sucked, and I truly believe he sucked. I really like him. I think he's a great guy. I think he works hard. That's part of my biggest concern, is everybody wants to say maybe the lack of an offseason hurt him. I think he probably came in prepared.
McCourty's thinking, he worked hard. He's listening going, thanks, Andy.
No, but I really like him.
He's a perfect Patriot. Yeah. Well, he does everything the way they want him to do it.
If he doesn't know he sucked last year, then that's the biggest part of the problem there is.
Right.
Because he sucked. But I like him. I don't have anything against him. I want him to be good. I think he's one of the nicest men in that locker room. I think he's a great Patriot as a kind of head down, do as I'm told, work hard, lead by example. The one problem is last year he couldn't play. Flat out couldn't play competitively.
What if, you know, again.
You know why you have to fixate on the negative.
You know, is there any chance that.
Bottom line,
you know,
ball.
Is there any chance that maybe 30% of his performance is his fault and the other 70 was thinking, relying on other guys and they just weren't doing their job?
I'm not going to eliminate the safety situation as being a factor, but I think I've heard that too much as an excuse.
Yeah.
And well, you always hear
well, but
it.
There were a lot of times, too, where there was a lot of daylight between him and the receiver.
And
you didn't see that
that's
in the first year.
Let's just say, for argument's sake, they put him on an island more than they wanted to because of the safety situation. They still ran by him.
Yeah. And not only that,
I could see the safety situation.
Targeted. You know, you talk about targeted.
Well, because once they saw he was wounded,
we can
they
remember
went after
stretches
him.
In a game where, man, they were going after
him. I could see if he let up, like, you know, dozens of those 15-yard outs at the sticks, you know, 10-yard outs for first downs at the sticks, because he's way back knowing, I don't have safety help. I would say, you know what? He knows he can't rely on Matthew Slater or Julian Edelman or whoever else was the jag of the safety of
Sergio
the week.
Sergio Brown.
You know? He let guys run by him all the time.
Sergio Brown today.
Well, Andy has been on record as calling Sergio Brown the worst NFL player in history.
He hates him almost as much as Rondo.
Worst defensive player I've ever seen.
In the Bill Belichick era.
No, I've ever seen.
Oh, ever?
Yeah, I've ever seen.
In football.
At any level. No, in the NFL. I mean, not in high school where you have kids who shouldn't be playing.
Toughs.
I was waiting for, you know, not having safety shying away from contact.
That's true. Paul played in high school, so Sergio Brown's at least one up on the ladder.
On Tuesday, Three Wise said her final goodbyes here. Lindsay Petruni, Scott, New Jersey, says, "Hey, guys, longtime listener, fifth-time emailer. My mom says if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything, y'all. So as far as Lindsay goes, all right."
That's
not nice. She's probably listening, too.
No, she's not.
She will never look
back. Thank you for the card.
Yes, thank you for the card, but she'll never listen. Nor should she. She'll never look back.
No, I think she will. She said she's going to actually call in from time to time.
Well, that'll be the only time she'll listen is when she's on the other end of the line, because she should not be listening. She's going to San Diego. Get out on the beach and have fun.
Get out of the
beach. There are these things called smartphones and iPods.
Yeah, and it's
all
not
that.
A good idea to have that on at the beach with the sand and the water and everything. Get on the beach and enjoy yourself.
It. Well, she has to work.
Get out your bed and in your playbook.
She does her work in her bed.
Oh.
Well, she's working for her boyfriend.
Oh.
As long as she keeps him happy there, the rest will be fine.
Johnny in L.A. also has a Lindsay Petruni email, but I can't even read
it. No, I don't think that's true.
It's really not nice.
No? So, Johnny, do you give her wine? Eric, did you get your wine?
What are you talking about?
Forget it.
It's in the fridge.
Christian from Denmark writes in, which stat would you most like to see improve next season, defensive-wise? Pressures, sacks, or picks?
Paulie. Wasn't it Paulie in L.A.?
Pressures. Their sacks were competitive. Their pressures need to be. I want more consistent pressure. Last year, they got a sack every time they got close, but they didn't get close often enough.
I agree. And I also would like timely pressure.
On 3rd and 26. I love how it grows every time we say 3rd and 14, 3rd and 23, 3rd and 20.
There was a
70.
There was a huge fourth down play in the AFC Championship game that Wilfork broke through and made Flacco get rid of it. And the play was open. If you recall, they showed that.
I do not.
That replay in the fourth quarter. They went for it on the fringe of field goal range, and Wilfork blew up the play. Timely pressure.
Torrey Smith was wide open.
Timely pressure. That's what you're looking for.
I have a memory.
Phil in Austin says, I know the weather up there has been pretty miserable lately, and this can sometimes bring out the worst in people. So today, I'd like to get the worst out of you guys. Here goes. Which press box has the worst food, Paul, other than the Patriots?
Never mind. San Diego.
Which?
I would say San Diego. Those box lunches
in
San Diego.
Yeah, box lunches in San Diego.
Just absolutely
is that what it is?
And there's
pathetic.
No room to eat it.
Dreadfully pathetic food at San Diego.
Yeah, okay.
And an otherwise beautiful place, not the stadium itself.
No, the stadium is a dump, too.
Stadium's a dump, but San Diego itself is one of the most beautiful places.
Qualcomm's in the bad, quote-unquote, bad part of San Diego. It's in a dump area.
Yeah, but when it's always 80 degrees, nothing's really that bad. Yeah.
Not always.
If you get shot, it's bad.
any other stadiums come to mind for bad
food?
Cold
while you're dying.
Food. Specifically bad food.
Generally, the food is pretty good.
Yeah,
I mean, you can find something to eat anywhere you go, but San Diego,
I'll tell you, for the Super Bowl, the price of the stadium, the Meadowlands has gone way down. Back in the old Giants Stadium, the food was much better. It's terrible.
I think the Meadowlands was overrated.
Oh,
honestly,
loved it.
I really
always
do.
One of my favorites because I'm a plain guy.
Oh yeah, but now
give me my choice to make my own stuff.
Right.
I'll take it every
time. They don't
get
rid of the ice cream.
No, they don't.
They don't do that anymore.
They used to have the ice cream treats cooler.
Good humor.
They don't have any of that.
I don't think they have that anymore.
Nope, they do not.
Yeah, that's a letdown.
Paul's happy he's not traveling anymore.
Well, I'm happy anyway, but
yeah, he's
all right. Which team has the worst looking cheerleaders?
Is this besides the
Patriots?
That's one. The Colts for years had some horrifically
Colts
ugly women.
Were
horrific.
Yeah,
I agree with Andy.
You'd think something more like Cleveland, right?
Do they have
cheerleaders? I don't think they have them. They don't have them there.
Who else has really?
Do you remember the day? Speaking of San Diego, the day we were in San Diego.
Just for the hell of it, I'll say the Jets. You know.
Do you remember the day we were in San Diego and the couple of the cheerleaders came on the elevator with us?
Yes.
And everybody just stopped talking.
And I came on the elevator with them.
Let me tell you. Arizona, San Diego.
San Diego, Washington, and Miami.
Miami, and
Washington.
Washington.
And Oakland.
Oh, well,
except for the ones in wheelchairs when they have the reunion.
Oh, that's right. You were there in 02. Now I remember.
Well,
Andy and I in Oakland, we were there the night that they had a little reception, alumni weekend, for the Raiderettes, and they brought them all back from the 60s.
Literally,
it was
all
painful.
Of them.
They did that in Atlanta when I was 60s, down there. And they
70s.
They didn't just have the reception. They had a performance on the field, and they're like these
70-year-old
cheerleaders just like barely being able to make it to their spots, limping around the field. It was
bad.
They asked Al Davis once, you know, Al, do you know that a couple of your cheerleaders are in porn? He goes, if they're good-looking broads, I'll keep them around.
That's how it should be.
Go we don't keep them around
morale,
for their minds. They
stand out there in showing their breasts. That they're supposed to be hot.
Who is the worst person to sit near during a press conference? Who is the worst person to sit near?
He doesn't work. He doesn't work in Boston anymore. Crap sheet.
I'll go Paul.
Oh, that was just flat out.
First
mean.
Of all, he and Bill always stare each other down because they're always mad at each other. And then, second of all, he spills over into your chair like his gut just hangs over on yours.
Really, just not right.
There's nobody you need to avoid in press conferences. I don't think. Do you?
I remember Brian Morey got into
a
shouting match with one of the guys for passing like notes during a Pete Carroll press conference. And, you know, they were passing like schoolgirls.
And that's why
notes.
Brian Morey would be on the list of worst people to sit
next to. So after the press conference, Brian started yelling at this guy, you know, what are you doing? You're not, you know, and so then they started screaming at each other.
And the guy told him that he's won his awards.
Right. Oh, that's who it was?
Yeah.
Who was the worst player to start a game for the Patriots
Sergio
in
Brown.
The Belichick era?
Oh, my God.
Did he start?
How perfect is that? You got to take another
Sergio
shot
Brown.
Your boy.
Wait, when did he start?
Didn't he start in Oakland?
He started.
Yeah, he started.
Pretty
last
sure he started
last
in
year
Oakland.
He started a game,
wow.
I think.
Yeah, in Oakland. Yeah, Sergio Brown.
Okay.
We're done. Move on.
I don't know. This
Eric Alexander.
Eric Alexander's got to get consideration.
AFC Championship
Eric
game.
Alexander right. was 10 times the defensive player that Sergio Brown is.
What was the worst interview you ever did?
Razai Dowling last year.
I'm going with Marcus Cannon last year.
Paul might be in agreement with that.
Why do you say let's?
Razai Dowling. That was a group interview, and it was right. I guess when they allowed the rookies to start talking, but they had already given them the memo on what not to say, and he was by far. It was incoherent. It was terrible. It was absolutely the worst. And everybody around was just like, it lasted about literally a minute and 20 seconds. And then everybody just went away from him.
Let me ask, what was the worst interview you guys ever did that you feel was your worst performance?
I've had a lot of those. I'm like, why didn't I ask that? Or why didn't I ask this? I'm thinking
I
more.
Think of any.
To answer the question, I'm trying to think of more, you know, the group interviews. That's not really your interview.
Right.
And that's the subject. I'm trying to think more. Like Ted Washington would be one that comes to mind for me, the most uncomfortable. But I'll have to go with way back in my first year, Willie McGinnis. I was doing one for Dave Crisoli in the old Patriots cyber sideline days, and he was coming off all those hamstring injuries. Remember when McGinnis was always hurt under Parcells?
Right, can't make the club from the tub.
You got it. Well, he had surgery in the off season, so. We're walking because he wouldn't stop, and this is at Bryant, and this is like literally my first or second day there, and I have the microphone and I'm holding it and the camera's with me and the, you know, this, none of these cordless microphones back in the day. It was like these long cords, you know, tripping people over and knocked. And I asked him, "Are you confident that the work that you did in the office?" He had surgery and did all this rehab. He had talked about this. "Are you confident that the work you did is going to allow you to stay healthy for 16 games?" And he just went up one side of me and right down the other. I mean, it was like Felger, you know. I don't know, there's a rumor you was gay. Are you gay? I didn't know what. I mean, he was just so incensed at the question. And literally, this was like my first week there. Maybe my first day. I don't remember. It was definitely early. And we ended up walking all the way by. You remember the dining hall, Freddie?
Yeah.
We walked down there and then turned the corner now we're in an area that reporters aren't even supposed to be. And Dave is like telling me, keep going. And we're walking like around this horse out into like the players' parking lot. Not a horse, like a wooden horse, not a, you know.
Not a thoroughbred. Story would have been much better.
And he's just like, you know, that's a dumbass question. That's the stupidest thing. I was like, well, no, Willie, you haven't. The last, you know, I think, I forget the numbers, but he had played something like 15 games in the previous 3 years or something like that. You know, so are you confident that what you did is going to allow you to play? Or is this something that's just always going to bother you? That was my question. He just thought that I was the biggest a-hole, and that was probably the worst interview I ever had.
My worst was Teddy Bruschi.
That's mine, too.
When he first came here. And it was so bad that I can't even remember. I know I was stupid in it, but I can't even remember exactly what I said. I just remember afterwards feeling like that Chris Farley character on SNL, like, you know, it was stupid.
Son of a.
It was something about, like, it was a preseason game, and he had cut his arm in the game. So he had this, like, big laceration on his arm. And he had some other thing before that on the arm, and you know, he had shown improvement, and I try to make like a correlation, you know, the last time you had a cut, you know, you were at this level, and now you guys are looking at me like he was looking at me like, what the hell are you talking about? And then after I got done, I was like, yeah, you have every right to think I'm an idiot, because
you said that to him.
I was thinking I had no idea, like what are you talking about, saying that to myself. It was really bad.
My worst with him is when I remember I said something, Bill had said something about him, and I went to him and said, well, Bill just said, well, I don't know that that's true. You could be making that up. I don't know that. And I was like,
what?
No, he just said it. And he was like confrontational with me. And then the next day I brought it down and actually brought the transcript and said, see, he said it. Also the one in Buffalo where I said, you know, you guys had three turnovers today.
How many?
Because I had missed the fourth.
How many?
We walked the 10 miles from the press box. Would you miss the game? Did you watch the game? We had four. How many?
I think the worst one I had
Realize Teddy Bruschi was an a-hole when he was a player.
I could easily have a Bruschi one, too. So I think we all could.
We were trying to do a feature on Vince Wilfork and this farm that he supposedly had where he had, you know, he would raise his own, like, livestock.
Off the grid.
It was off the grid. He didn't have, you know, he generated his own electricity and stuff. He had this huge farm.
Somebody, this is Wilfork?
Wilfork. Somebody said, oh, you should go do this story about him. He's got this thing.
Somebody?
It might have been one of you guys. I don't
remember. Wasn't me. I don't care about people off the grid.
No.
Andy's infatuated with that.
So I go up to him after training camp. I request him specifically for a one-on-one. He comes over. He's like, what's up, man? And I'm like, so I wanted to talk to you about your farm. He's like, I ain't got no farm. And I was like, well, okay, maybe it's not a farm, but you know, you've got the thing without the electricity. He's like, nope, I don't know what you're talking about. I was like, all right,
never mind.
Thanks,
you don't remember who told you about that?
No, I don't. It might have been Andy.
So you got set
it
up
might have
like
been
a
Andy.
Mother.
No, I don't think. I think
Wilfork was an a-hole, and I think he has some aspects of
really?
That on his property.
You sure? Yeah, maybe it was a different guy.
It was Wilfork.
No, I know, but maybe it was a different.
No, person?
I'm pretty sure
Wilfork has aspects of a farm in Florida that are so, he's joked about going off the grid. And for this day, for whatever reason, he wanted to be his a-hole self and not his smiling, funny self.
Which he rarely is the a-hole self.
A-hole.
He's not like Bruce
no,
Lee,
but he has
more
it.
Often than not.
He has it. He has the
he
a-hole.
He has it.
He does have it. Especially,
he broke it out that day.
I'll tell you when you can guarantee it'll come out for Vince, and I love Vince.
When they lose?
No.
Oh, when they win and they weren't expected?
When they dominate defensively, forget about it. It's like, you know, they don't really rank
that in a while.
They don't really rank 31st anymore when they, you know, like we're idiots for having said that they're second to last in defense.
Well, I think a lot of guys are like that.
What are you looking
TG
at?
And NJ writes in.
There's a guy on the screen with a Tom Brady like haircut. Why did you have to look over?
There was
Matt
somebody
to
else too.
Did you see your boy Federer came back from
that
two
ugly
sets
blonde?
Down
I can't see his microphone's in the way.
She's an ugly, mannish looking blonde. Fake blonde.
Now he's not on the microphone.
TG and NJ says, when does Ocho get cut?
At the end of training camp.
You think?
In training camp. They might kind of cut him early
wave?
So he can find a new job.
First wave, August 25th.
Yeah. Bye-bye, Ocho.
If Kevin Falk doesn't make the roster, he says he'll retire. But if we have an injury at the running back position halfway through the year, will the Pats be able to bring him back at that time? Is there no equivalent today for what used to be called the taxi squad?
Yes, there's a practice squad, but
he's not
Kevin Falk can't be on it.
Right.
Here's a question we had someone
proposed earlier. What if Patriots say, all right, Kevin, we're not bringing you back. Is there any way he becomes like an assistant running backs coach? Or does he hold out for one more year if they don't bring him in and say, maybe they'll call me later in the year?
No, I don't think he's going into coaching at the professional level. He's got too many business ventures.
I mean, I don't know exactly. I would tend to agree with Andy, but I don't know exactly what his plans are. I know he loves football, and I could see him coaching. I don't know
if
he would
love
coach.
It at any level.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if he'd coach at the NFL.
If you actually love football, you could argue NFL's the worst level to be at.
Right. It's such a business.
Yeah. Go coach kids.
Teach football, you know, right. As opposed to
Louisiana, some like he could go to some neighborhood where he's going to be a star. You got poor kids, you know, that he could be, you know, he could establish himself as, you know, such a presence in that community in football, kind of like Dion's done in, where is he, Texas somewhere or something? I don't know. California, one of those.
Nathan,
those big Stan Sanders.
Nathan from Southern Texas, California, right? Jake the Snake Steele, Big Head, Little Penis, Miller Heavy, and Ben Gay. Can you guys address two
Your mother
things.
Doesn't think it's little.
The O-line in the running game. And O-line is a concern because I don't think we'll have enough depth. And with Mankins coming off an injury, Vollmer susceptible to injury, Waters a year older, I think that we may have some legitimate concerns at depth. And if we That's don't stay PR healthy up front, these offensive tools won't do Brady much good. And lastly,
Paul, you want to handle this myth that they have nobody to play offensive line?
Lastly, running back. Let's just finish.
It's not.
I don't see Ridley coming in and being a legitimate threat. He has serious ball control issues that doesn't make up for his occasional 20-yard breaks.
Who's
ball
this
security
negative douche?
Is a must because if we cough up the ball, it's not like our defense can go three and out and get us the ball back. All
who
right. So
that?
The first thing.
Wait. Who was that?
Nathan in Southern California.
He's very negative.
That's okay. Yeah.
I mean, take all Ridley. Kinds, yeah? I mean, did Fumble Ridley
twice,
have
right?
a fumbling problem in college?
Yes.
He did. Okay.
That's why he
There
took,
goes that idea.
No, that's why it took him so long to become the featured back at LSU. He had ball security issues.
That's why we need Kevin Falk as the assistant running backs coach to teach him not to fumble.
Now, in terms of the offensive line, I think Andy and I are in full agreement here.
Agreement.
I think if everybody's healthy, they have a lot of depth. I mean, they have a lot of guys who've started, and I just posted this yesterday. They have 10 different offensive linemen who have started multiple games in the NFL. That's a lot of depth. Not all 10 of those guys will end up making the team, even. So,
Vin.
If Vollmer, if his situation, he can't play, now you start,
what is his
you start
situation?
Thinking about it. Well, I don't know. He hasn't been out there for OTAs. I don't know what his health
because
is.
Because I saw some speculation that it's the ankle. And then I've speculated that it could be the back.
Yeah, I think it's
Is
the
it
back.
The back of the ankle?
I think it's the back.
It's the Achilles.
But I don't know that for with any degree of certainty. Nobody has told me that. But if for whatever reason he can't play, now you're looking in at a guy like Marcus Cannon playing right tackle. Now, even if you want to go under the assumption that Marcus Cannon is a solid right tackle, which remains to be seen because we haven't really seen him play a whole lot. Now your depth is challenged a little there. I still think you have a guy like Robert Gallery who could play right tackle if you needed to. He's played a lot of right tackle, although better as a guard. You know, who knows if a younger guy that we don't know much about.
At the Copa.
Yeah, like Matt Copa from last year who's on the practice squad. I always look at guys that are on the practice squad for the whole year as guys that obviously showed the coaching mm-hmm. staff something.
Yep.
And he's one of them. But Brian Waters' situation, if he comes back, again, you have Waters, Mankins, Copen, Conley. Throw Ryan Wendell in there. I just don't see these problems with the offensive line now.
Sold.
Now listen, in
that's your biggest problem, in my opinion. Your left tackle, is he ready to be a legit left tackle
yes.
every week like Matt Light was?
I think he is.
I don't.
I think he's more prepared than Matt Light was coming in. Yeah. He has. I mean,
certainly he was.
Well, Matt Light
in there.
Matt Light took over as a rookie and had to learn right away. Solder has had a year to get
that is true
used to the system, and now he's being handed the starting job.
But are you getting to the email? We had an email about this.
What?
Left tackle? No.
No, I.
Because there was an email that said the Patriots have been fortunate for like 20 years they had two guys play left tackle.
Oh, okay. Let me get to it.
Okay.
Boston Dave says, I'd like to get your thoughts on the Patriots' fortune to have a steady presence at left tackle for 20 years. For Bruce Armstrong to Matt Light, the tackle spot has been manned by an above-average player for quite a while. While neither Armstrong or Light are headed to Canton, They were steady performers, and New England was fortunate to have them. Hopefully, Solder can add 10 to 15 years and make it almost 40 years of consistent left tackle play. Has any other franchise had that kind of consistency at left tackle?
I mean, it's not exactly Williams to Yastrzemski, but it is. I mean, are they due for another guy to just be there for 10 years?
I'm just surprised you know who Carl Yastrzemski is.
Says the guy who calls him Eugene Chung.
I didn't call Carl Yastrzemski Eugene Chung.
But
good, Fred.
I mean,
I don't know about the other teams. I don't know. You know,
no, I'm not. I'm saying, what are the chances?
Like, who replaced Jackie Slater with the ring? I don't know.
No, but
did Orlando
saying,
Pace replace Jackie Slater?
What are the chances you get triple in a row Pro Bowl tackles? Pro Bowl tackle, Pro Bowl. Well, yeah. Actually, all pro tackles.
All pros.
For the first two. Mm. What are the chances? I got to think they're not great that you're going to go decade, three tackles. And that's just pure numbers, I'm saying. I'm not saying he definitely stinks or he's definitely good. Or even injury.
Right. Your point is good, bad, or indifferent to have only one guy play for 10 years.
It sounds like the odds are against it, but I think he's a good player. I think he's a solid player. He has the chance to be.
But I think Vollmer's a good player whose a back injury could end his career. There's a lot that goes into it. And I'm not sold that he's ready every week to face Freeney, to Von Miller, to Mario Williams, to eight of the guys in Houston.
In fairness, neither was Matt Light. He had his
moments
against.
Matt Light was a lot more ready as a rookie than Solder was, if you ask me, coming out of college.
Well, I mean, he had played in a passing offense as a left tackle nonstop. I mean, that's what he did.
Now, I love Solder.
I don't know why Bill was going to make him a guard.
I think Solder is a very athletic player for the position. I like a lot of what I saw of Solder last year.
Sure.
But I think Matt Light's resume coming out of Purdue was probably better than Solder's coming out of Colorado.
But my question, even don't compare the two, is just the competition. We were impressed that Matt Light did it, and he was already a Pro Bowl tackle. Well, that's what you face at that position every week. So Solder can't be good. He has to be impressive. He has to meet the challenge of those guys that I just listed each and every week.
Yeah, I mean, I think chances are, based on last year, you're going to get a drop-off there.
Yes.
Because Light played at an exceptionally high level
you
last year.
You probably would have had a drop-off
get a drop
with Light.
Off.
Don't you think Solder's a better athlete than Light was?
Yes, I do.
I'm not sold.
I think he's a better athlete.
So
he has better feet.
And I agree
I need
with
to see
you,
him make those blocks that are 50 yards from the line of scrimmage.
Going on that assumption.
I don't think he's anywhere near as strong, though.
Probably not.
Not even close.
But
not even in the same category.
He can get that. You can't get more athletic at this point. You can get stronger, though, at this point.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's going to take time.
Yeah, but
I
just think he has more potential, I think, than Light did coming into the NFL.
Did any of his comments from last week come out? He had a one-on-one with Jason Cole of Yahoo Sports. Did that come out?
I've not seen anything.
I do remember the interview you're talking about just because I saw it happening, but I don't know what he
Omar
said.
Omar writes in, he says, Andy.
Yeah!
Is Sergio Brown worse than Brandon Merriweather? Ha ha!
Yes.
Yes.
I thought he had you.
Yeah.
Yes, he is.
I would go with Merriweather. Just because I don't.
Although it's a bang bang question.
Oh.
That's just poor to me.
Where is Merriweather now?
Washington. For now.
Ironically. Bang bang.
Andrew from Monterey says Sunday I ran my first full marathon in San Diego in 4 hours, 8 minutes. That's pretty good. I just wanted to thank you all for one of your best shows last Thursday. I listened to it from the start line through mile 15. It was one of the funniest and informative
miles.
With the OTA updates in a long time. It definitely gave me something to keep my mind off the hills. I was laughing out loud and getting some weird looks. The Veet for Men reviews are getting better every episode. Please keep them up. And with that said...
Oh, we have one?
Yes, we'll...
Barely.
We have one. It's got some cookie stains on it, but that's all right. This one... Somebody actually did a poem.
Was it John and Lynn?
No. Do we have the opening? Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
Apparently not.
It's time for the Fred Kirsch Veet for Men Manscaping Tip of the Week.
Oh, it's a deep burn. Oh, so deep.
Do not put on knob and bollocks. The bollocks I knew and loved are gone now. In their place is a maroon-colored bag of agony, which sends stabs of pain up my body every time it grazes against my thigh or an article of clothing.
Now, here's the always smooth Fred Kirsch.
I immediately regret this decision.
All right, this feet review comes from a guy named Mike the Big N. Sergeant Slaughter and his two lovely daughters do get the occasional trim. New bird on the stage, nearly half my age. My purchase a bit of a whim. The instruction book did not get a look. I thought I knew how to use Veet. Whipped out my tower while stood in the shower, spreading it liberally all over my meat. I flipped off the cap, lifted up the old chap, pushing the limits, I'm sure. I wanted to groom in the Valley of Doom. Now my starfish is bleeding and raw.
Oh.
I tried to keep calm, washing off the napalm, leaving me all of a fluster. You could boil a small lake or cook a big steak with the heat from my genital cluster.
Oh.
Less grass on the wicked, but all's not cricket. It does add an inch or two. A full week pass? How long will it last? Still unable to sit, stand, or poo. You may well cry, but tears will dry, leaving balls as smooth as jam jars. My slong looks huge, still no signs of pubes, so I'm happy to award it 5 stars.
Wow.
That's good.
I like the use of schlong and meat.
but Andy laughed the most at poo.
Right. So that's our Veet for the day.
Wait, so it really burns immediately?
Well, I imagine if you use too much of it. I think I think from all the reviews I've read, you're not supposed to use it on your genitals.
But everybody runs.
But
right
everybody's
to their genitals.
That's the first place they go.
Wow!
Right,
just
right,
so they're
right to the old knob and bollocks.
Good lord!
Knob and bollocks.
These are your people, Fred.
Why are they my people?
Because you're the only one on this show, apparently, who's admitted to man grooming.
Yeah, I use a blade.
What?
Like a
what?
Man.
Uh-oh.
I hurt my pecker. Want to help Mally out.
My pecker.
Mally has started a new Patriots fan club. Hey, guys, and Eric, I've started a Patriots fan club here in Omaha, Nebraska, in the metro area, and was hoping you could shout out the contact
metro
info
Omaha.
For me. We have a lot of New England natives in the area,
really?
Especially around Offutt Air Force Base.
Thank you for your services.
The Facebook page is facebook.com/HeartlandPatsFan. Heartland Pats Fan.
Go to patriots.com and register that fan club as an official one.
Right, and the email
job,
is heartlandpatsfans@gmail.com. heartlandpatsfans@gmail.com.
Wonder if there are more Pats fans now because of Danny Woodhead.
Could be.
There is a club that's already there. It's like right from around Danny Woodhead's college.
North
they just
plant,
started right, plank, north right plant, at the end plant. Of last year.
They should merge.
Big noble yard.
But you can start or join trains. A Patriots fan club right on patriots.com in the fan club registry. We have, what, about 150
1,
clubs around the world already started. But if you want to start one, all you have to do is have a minimum of 10 members, share their contact info with us, and then you can be officially registered on patriots.com with your fan club.
If you use Veet, those members will be hairless.
Oh. Mm.
Boy,
is Mally a boy or a girl?
I have no idea. Does it matter?
Yes. Yes, it does.
Why?
Because despite what Tom Curran says, mouth does have gender.
What, you're looking for some services from this person?
I'm just saying.
You look at me as if I have something to say to that.
Every email has to be sized up with whether or not they're going to go down on them.
Well, I would like to eliminate the ones that I don't want.
What are you doing anything with anyone for?
I'm not, but you got to keep your options open.
Oh, do you?
Due diligence.
Does Bill
Belichick
know that?
Really? Yeah.
Well, yeah. If she's
she
ever
knows?
Gone, if she bolts, I got to be ready.
You go from there.
Yeah. I got to be ready.
Jump off that bridge when you come to
right.
it.
You think Bill Belichick doesn't have his emergency list ready?
No, I don't. Oh, for the team?
Yes.
Yeah, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking
about
marriage.
Well, I think he probably has both emergency lists ready.
Oh, for God's sakes.
As he should.
Brooklyn Matt writes,
you don't have a plan?
Hey,
just
Andy.
In case?
Hey, Andy, did you hear about the naked zombie cannibal attack in Miami on Memorial Day? Well, I'm launching a full-scale investigation as to your whereabouts at the time.
Not funny.
You fall under heavy scrutiny, and I'm way suspicious. I mean, there's just got to be some kind of outlet for your pent-up 5-hour energy, aggression, and your general dislike of mankind.
Of you.
Andy, I doubt you can keep all that bottled up year-round. That naked cannibal zombie has got your alter ego signature traits written all over it. I think that's how you blow off steam on your long weekends. Now come clean,
blow
fess
off
up,
steam in your mother's mouth.
Turn yourself in.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Fred, I really think you need to suspend him for at least a show.
I'm not really here today.
2 weeks, 2 weeks in a row. About
and strippers says that Veet can be used on the arms, chest, legs, back, shoulders, and around your briefs, but not the face, scalp, genital, or perianal areas.
Ooh. What is perianal?
taint? I would imagine that's in...
The taint region?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Is that right? I don't know. Peri would be perimeter. So perimeter of the
But not
anus.
Right on your
right,
anal?
Right on there?
Peri from the Latin, meaning around Uranus.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this edition of PFW wow. in Progress. Thanks for joining us in this special off-season
Sorry.
Show. And we'll be back
Sorry.
On Thursday with another one. See you then.
That was another unpredictable edition of PFW in Progress, the podcast for informed Patriots fans worldwide. Like what you heard from the PFW boys? Then support the show and follow your team even more closely by subscribing to the paper that makes the podcast possible, Patriots Football Weekly. Get your subscription right now by calling 1-800-494-PATS or by logging on to pfwonline.com. There's even a web-only international option for Patriots fans outside the U.S. PFW in Progress, brought to you by the writers of Patriots Football Weekly.